All right, everybody ready to get started? Mr. Raleigh, you have any introductions or announcements?
Did anyone see Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid? If you remember that scene, it's rules what rules. So you asked for this meeting. It's informal in nature in that it gives you a chance to get away from the protocol of, you know, being called upon, making the motions, doing all that. Overall, there are three topics. The first part of your meeting, you can decide which topic you want to talk about first. These are the three topics that you chose last time. And my recommendation is that you spend 45 minutes on a topic, go to the next one, go to the next one. You will be back. There, you know, extreme likelihood that you're going to have to revisit these options, but I think that's fine. I know that Lynn, your chairwoman, has to leave a little early, but I think that we'll just keep going on there if you need meetings here. And really, that's about it. Staff is here as a resource. We have tried to anticipate some of the questions or information that you might need. VIMS is on the way, I understand. So Ron and Danielle and Mike will be here shortly. Obviously, since one of the issues is the sanctuary, you know, that's going to be VIMS, Ron Lipschitz, to really address any points you want to ask there. And the other part on the sponge crab, depending on what's on your mind about sponge crabs, you know, that ties in with the whole concept of why the sanctuary is there as well. Effort control, we do have some information on that, depending on what you want to talk about. But really, this is all up to you to decide the flow of the meeting, and we're glad to try and help out where needed as staff.
Thank you. We do need to approve the minutes from last meeting. Has everybody been able to review the minutes? Yeah. A motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make a motion for the minutes as presented.
Do you have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? The minutes are approved. Next, we need to decide which order we're going to go in. Like Rob said, 45 minutes dedicated to each agenda item. Do you have any feedback on which y'all would like to discuss first? No?
No.
Rob, you think we should leave sanctuaries, go ahead and bypass sanctuaries?
Yeah, wait for Ron Mitchell, sure.
All right, let's start with sponge crabs then.
Might want to wait for Ron.
Yeah. Right.
All right.
So that leaves one choice.
Effort control.
Right.
Any discussion?
Somebody brought up, I can't remember, I know who it was, I can't think of his name, brought up the, I'm not saying I'm in favor of this, but there was a discussion about pot tagging and stuff at the last meeting. There was some discussion, and a lot of us have had it amongst ourselves about how many folks that we know that blatantly violate their pot tag, and assuming their licenses. I don't know if anybody else sees it where they are. We have one character in Elizabeth River that's originally from North Carolina, and he had so many pots set around this year. He had the same number on all his buoys, but he has his buoys painted about four different variations of red and white. He had a white one with a red stripe, a red one with a white stripe, a white one with a red X on it. And all it was just a method to kind of disguise the amount of gear he had. And the discussion at that other meeting was, what's that fellow's name about that?
Wayne Friend.
Yeah.
Wayne Friend, he also fishes in the Potomac, and how much that.
I think there was also a discussion of the cost and the pot tagging and the costs that were would be involved.
Well, you know, Rob can elaborate on this, but this went forth all the way to proposed legislation or something at one time, but
we had a regulation in 2001 on the books. Just could not get the funding at that time. It was listed as about $260,000 U.S. We did have the regulation. It did go through. In 2009, Joe Briss put together a proposal. Again, it was close to $300,000 to administer it. It didn't even make it that far as it did in 2001. And I do want to say with this opportunity, you have to use your big voice because we've only got one microphone there. I just pushed one a little bit closer. We do have an audio, so if you could speak up, that'd be really good. Thank you.
I know Ken Diggs brought this point up, and not the crab where he's talking about. It's a crab around Thimble or anywhere like that in the past, and I guess even now you lose a lot of pots to tugboat traffic. I find buoys up where I am where all of a sudden they put the barge in reverse and it dropped the pots in the middle of the river, and they're from way up above. Some of them are from Maryland. Some of them are from up the bay. You know, we don't see that many, but you'll see a barge that has three or four buoys tangled in its tow line. You know, the bribe or something will be under the front of the barge when they push it instead of towing it. And possibly on. And I can understand that. But there's law enforcement swears that there's no way that they can possibly count these things. It's just too time consuming. I was watching something on television the other night that John Stossel had on, and they were talking about how things ought to be shared. And they got back to the old basic idea of the tragedy of the commons. And what the tragedy of the commons is basically back in England and Ireland and whatnot, they had common areas where everybody would graze their sheep. And it didn't cost anybody to graze their sheep there, so if a guy had a dozen sheep and there were 10 of them had a dozen sheep, everything was fine. But then somebody decided, shoot, this isn't costing me anything, I'll get about 50 sheep. And I'll put 50 sheep out here, and the next guy did it, and after a while, pretty soon there's no grass. And everybody's sheep starved. So they finally started dividing the commons up into private areas, and everybody had to take care of their own area. And they didn't overgraze it. So everybody, you know, prospered to a degree that all their product didn't die. So that's kind of where we are in this game. But I don't know how you control the greedy folks amongst the rest of everybody else. There has to be some kind of answer to it, but I'm not sure if, you know, tagging might be the answer, but it's going to be a problem. You know, I was bringing up what you talked about losing your pots to the toes and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying that. That's just crazy.
Well, it's not crazy. It's just it's a problem that's got to be overcome somehow.
Yeah, I mean, if you were able to go buy them every time you walk through tag, I'd be all fine and dandy, but I mean, you know what it is down here. I mean, Tugboat Alley, you're going to lose. If you crowd anywhere down here, you're going to lose. That's it. It don't matter. And you can't run from them because you go at Willoughby, you're going to lose. You go Elizabeth River, you're going to lose. You go on Hampton Bar, you're going to lose. So, I mean, you're, down here, it's just, I mean, if you want to protect your pots, the best thing to do down here is just stay home. Because you can't, I mean, that's something we would have. If you're going to tag them, you definitely, you know, would have to address that. Otherwise, we're just
even
more out of business down here.
I think you could handle that. You know, if you're in a particular area, and you could certainly it wouldn't be that time consuming that you've lost so many and that stuff to go along with you one day, you can't pop real quick.
I mean, we
as long as you got your food in hand, so it's identified.
I mean, that's all fine and dandy, but I mean, down here in the spring, I mean, it's a grind. We keep up with the crabs. We don't just stay in the same area for days on end and stuff like that. It don't work that way down here. I mean, you pick up, you might be crabbing off a back river at the salt pond one day, and the next day be down the Little Creek. But you can say, well, I'm not going to go follow the crabs down here. Crabs, $60, $70 a bushel, because I'm going to call the inspector and let him come here and see how many pots I lost. I mean, that's all fine if you're part-time and that's a hobby, you can do that. But for people, I mean, when I set my clock, I mean, you're moving, you've got to go because you only have X amount of days, X amount you can catch. I mean, you know, it'd be fine then if you was crabbing in a creek somewhere, I can understand, you know, ain't no problem. You lose two or three a summer, yeah, you can tackle that.
Well, that's the great Wayne just locked this up. He crabbed in both of his home in it above real one bridge, so that's not crabbing in a creek. And he used tags and the rest of them like that. And they move constantly, move up all summer long. I mean, you can find out any excuse you want if you don't want to do something.
I mean, it's not.
I think it can be controlled.
I mean, it's not an excuse. I mean, you lose 100 in a blow one night in the summertime. Well, you got to go get 100 out of the yard. I mean, that's realistically happens down here. You lose 100, 150, that can happen. It does happen. You know what I mean? It's not. We're not losing. You're not talking about 5 or 10 crab pots. I mean, down here, you might. What if the grass gets them? That happens. Clean up above the James River Bridge when you set them in May or March. If all the grass comes down, winds them up, and they're in the middle of the channel. I mean, what is people supposed to do? Just say, wait, this is the most profitable time of the year. We've already been sitting home all winter because we don't have nothing to do. So what are you supposed to do? Sit around and wait and get more tags before you can go back to work? I mean, this is a lot of people down here, only income. A lot of us don't have rock tags. We're not into other stuff like that. Crabbing is our only income. So when it's down, you've got to go. I mean, downtime, that's one thing that I think needs to be a priority. Is for us, the full-timers, we need to be able to go to work.
Wait. What? Does anybody, do you, have any kind of idea how to come up with a solution for that?
At one time when we were talking about this, this was back in 07 or 08 when we started talking about it, BMRC was saying that if you went and lost X number of pots and you had to replace those pots, that you could come in with a receipt that you had bought 50 more pots or something. They issue you 50 more tags.
I mean,
wait, hold on a minute. Let me just finish with that. I mean, you got to figure out the details of how you would handle something like that. But that was one solution. But if you say you got 600 crab pots in the yard and you can only fish, what is it, 245? So that gives you, 355? You're still sitting on the bank. I guess it would be some kind of way you could document how many crab pots you have. And then, you know, if you could come in with your loss, and then they reissued those tags. I mean, I'm just...
I mean, but if we're getting at all this pot tagging and counting crab pots, I mean, down here, I just don't know where all these crabbers, all these pots. I mean, well, one or two crabbers might have some pots, but I don't see where all these crabbers. I mean, down here, a crabber is scarce.
I'm not arguing with you on any of it.
I understand, but I mean, if we want to, in my mind down here, effort is definitely not the problem. Now, maybe where some of the effort is concentrated at, that might have something to do with it. I'm not saying that doesn't. Because you only have a little box to work in as it is down here.
Well, here's what we have to look at a little bit in this is that it might not be a problem right now, but you got a piece of paper right here somewhere that has all these waiting lists and coupon and late effort. It looked like you probably saw it too. Everybody that I talked to since we walked the door saw a little spurt of crabs this fall. What do you do in the spring when all these people come out of the woodwork? And then all of a sudden, a lot of people want to.
That was why I was wondering why we had to cut our limit, why we didn't get crabbing until December 15th.
Well, because you know, we've been through so many hard years. We want to catch it all in one year. You know, you want to sell it all for nothing.
Well, we weren't selling for nothing. We were getting $70 a week.
I know. But hell, you know.
So was everybody else, Jeremy?
If you've been around about 4 years, you'll understand what I'm talking about.
But where are all these people coming from? I mean, it's not free to go crabbing. I just don't
know. Listen, you'd be surprised. You need to come to Cape Charles in the spring of the year. I'll be more glad to show you piles and piles of pots on the dock. And the boatloads are still coming down that are being thrown overboard that you never see. There's a problem. Something needs to be done.
Maybe they should come visit us in the summertime because we don't have it down here. It's not this big pot. We don't have these rigs out.
There's a problem.
There's something that needs to be done. This point I've made many times, geographical location. When you've got plenty of crabs on the western shore, the eastern shore, I'm going to say that we got a problem when it's vice versa. Mark's absolutely right. In the springtime, which for me, I think it's law enforcement, but we have boat trailer loads and trailer loads come down the same man. same man, and you're right there. You can count, you count him on his trailer.
How long does that last?
And then the next day he's got another trailer load. That's what we're here for. We're trying to figure, hey, let me finish. We're trying to figure out a plan, not to argue with one another. We're trying to figure out a plan, something to get rid of 100 regulations that they haven't done any good over years. Let's try to come up with a plan and figure things out, how it worked for everybody. Tagging a pot, I've always been against that. I don't think that'll work. I don't ever believe we'll ever get the money to do it when you start with it. Now, the next suggestion would be that we have a funding body tag. That's not going to work. It's hard enough to make it as it is without having a body tag. Well, my the only thing I can come up with is the fine itself. If I guess I could ask Rob or maybe law enforcement, this pot limit's been in effect for many years. How many fines have ever been written for people having over the amount of pots that they're supposed to have?
I know.
If you ever catch three or four of them, make the fine stiff enough, that may deter that. It's like drink and driving. I see signs up the road that says if you drink too much, it costs you $10,000. That will wean you from drinking too much. Same way it goes for if you get caught with too many pots, if the fine is stiff enough, that may slow that down. That's the only suggestion I have as far as limited amount of pots you're supposed to fish.
You know, I go a lot of what you're talking about there, and this thing about law enforcement not being able to police it. Everybody knows he's got too many pots out. I mean, daggone, if they want to catch him, they can catch him. It's just like when the coal ring came out. Law enforcement could go out there when that 2 3/8 went out there, and they patrolled every tributary, the bay, everywhere, and they wrote all those tickets. They put everybody out there at one time to do it. So, I mean, I know if it's enough of a complaint and enough of an issue that law enforcement can find the ones that are doing it, because everybody knows who they
are.
They're
already
anyway.
On a bushel limit. If you got 255 pot limit,
but we're talking
you
about
catch the 29 baskets of crabs. If you set 1,000 pots, what if you don't? If you just go let them sit there and let the turtles eat them up down here? I mean, you ain't done nothing. I mean, I'm just saying you're already. I mean, you look like me took care of a lot of that when people were catching with 255 pots, catching 21, 29 baskets, whatever it was, and having to quit. I mean, that's not that many crabs. If there's any
did
crabs,
did you pull your pots up when you were catching every new limit?
Well, I can catch 47 baskets. No, I didn't have a problem.
Well,
I took 390 pots down to Little Creek, and I know I didn't have a problem catching them.
I can tell you right now.
I didn't even have what I was allowed
to have. I
know
people that are continuing, they're going to let their pots stay in the water no matter what, because they know one day the catch is going to drop off and they want to catch their limit. So they're going to dump crabs that are dead.
Well, I'm just glad I crab where we don't have this problem. And that's in James River, where middle, where we have 300 biggest male harvests of anywhere. We don't, I mean, I don't see, I mean, this is, we have a very popular area. I mean, down here, but we're just not having the same problem. And I'm not saying that nobody isn't, but down here, if it wasn't for one or two, I mean, you can ask the Marine Patrol. I mean, it's not about the ones down here, because they boarded me enough. They know there's not that many people. There's a handful of skiffs out of Hampton, a handful of skiffs scattered around. And then you go up the James River, and it's about four or five big work boats that crab up there now, where it used to be tons. But, I mean, we're not having this ever. So I'm not saying that this is not happening, but I know in our area, this is not pot type. I mean, we're not having a problem with crabbing next to people. I mean, if it wasn't for, like, my dad, me, and a couple other people, it wouldn't even be a crab or nowhere around us.
I agree with you 100%.
I mean, that's peeler pot and crab pot. So I can't, that's why I'm having a hard time really blaming a whole lot of this on effort or pot saturation, because in my area, and I crab Little Creek in the spring, Little Creek in the fall, up to the mouth of Back River, all through Hampton Road, that's where we work. We're not experiencing this, but maybe we're not, but I'm just saying, that's down here in this area, we're not experiencing this.
I go back to what I said before, we go back to your geographic location, what happens in your area is happening in ours, and what might be happening in ours may not be happening in yours. And so, I still go back to my original comment, there's only way to can't control it, except, I believe, with the fine. And, Rob, you never answered my question. Did you know how many people had ever got tickets for having too many pots? Any idea?
I'd say a limited number from what I understand. There have been a few.
What's the limited number?
I'd have to look at
less
the
than five.
Citations, maybe. But
I know
one. I would say in the ballpark of five or six. Maybe.
Five or six, yeah.
Well, they got two people down my way last year.
James River, did they, I mean, Tom McRiver, did they give you the tags or you buy your tags?
Maybe it's Maybe enforcement.
But we have a big problem home in the spring. We have that problem.
Much smaller scale.
Years and years. Big problem.
What I'm saying, just about every location everywhere has got pot tag, whether it's lobsters or whatever, and that the fishermen always had to pay for them themselves.
Yeah. Well, what I see about it is, and what a little bit of research I've done, is the 85 populations that's more taking more benefit off this than the 425s.
Or the 255s.
You know, all the 255s, you know. People got 85 pots, and like I've said it means before, you know, I can't feed my family on 85 pots. People's got to do what they got to do. And over the years, they got caught in a loop where, okay, we just buy 85 pot license. They said, just keep the crab pot license. So that's what they did. So if you look at the bulk on, you know, how many 85 pot license there, I'm not saying pointing any fingers or whatever, but that's where you're going to have the bulk of your problem, because, you know, other than banking crabs on your 425 pot license.
I mean, we might not notice it because I don't know what kind of permits everybody's got. Maybe there's a lot of people running around down here with 85 pot permits fishing. 300 crab pots, 200 or whatever.
You're only looking at people who've got big licenses, but I mean, I'm sure Rob will say if you look on some people's managed oil reports, got 85 pot license catching the limit from all people.
Yeah.
Some of them got 85 license, they have field pot license, you know.
You can take peeler pots, crab pot license, you can swip it up, switch them around, do whatever you want. You know, it's, you know, we've sat down in meetings and discussed this for hours and hours and hours on end.
I do know when, back when they were talking about the tag, it was 2001, you said, we were having a crab with the board, and some people in the back said that they had been carrying boatloads of pots for 4 days. There was this beginning of tragedy, and somebody asked them, well, how can you fish that many pots? And he said, well, I've done a stroke for 2 days, but the main thing is to catch them while they're hot. And I guess after they soaked for a few days, the price was up, and the price went down, and maybe he took some back home. Terrible. Up to the eight times every little when you first come back and look.
Well, something that I see is right now, I don't care what kind of license you got, you're supposed to have no more than 255 pots inside a tributary, correct?
Doesn't matter. Right. Or the 300.
No, 255.
You reduce that when?
Yes,
2,000.
And I see people that I know, you know, just a, you know, a couple areas that I travel, you know they have more than that number of pots. I'm not saying they have twice that, but some of the areas that we work, or, you know, Mark will tell you this, they're so confined that it's almost like adding, you know, two or three people to that. It's almost, you know, like you've added a whole other crabber or two in there. And some of these places have, what I talked to Rick Robbins years ago, about kind of a holding capacity. You overwork it, and there's, sometimes they'll do what Mark was talking about. They won't crab those spots every day. They'll only go to them about 2 days a week, maybe three at the most. But they're continuing to catch a little bit. You know, they'll catch most the first day and catch a little more the second day. And I think after 3 days are up, they're probably not catching a whole lot more. But they're still catching and they're still there. I understand what Ken's talking about. You know, I've done exactly what he's done in the past. I've got, so I don't do it much anymore. But early going off in the spring, effort in the little ditches that I work in. I'm looking at these numbers here, and I see in the Lafayette River, 47,000 pounds of male harvest in 2013. And the Lafayette River is nothing. But that's where a couple of those guys that I'm talking about work. I can't even go in there anymore. There ain't any room to go in there. I used to stay in there. Don't even try to go in there. Up the eastern branch of Elizabeth River where I live, they got the whole Elizabeth River. That's all three branches. didn't even catch that much. And it's not for lack of reporting. I think we're all reporting what we're supposed to down there. But that just shows you the density of the pots in that one river. Out behind my house, I work right out of my house on the Houston branch. First going off in the spring, there's four lines of pots in front of my house, all the way around the river.
It's crazy that that little river catches more than the Manzan River. That's crazy.
I think it does too.
You know how many people used to come over the area where I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a ghost town now. You can call up a lot. It's a ghost town.
Well, you know, it would do.
It's crazy that that river, I mean, that's a lot bigger, isn't it?
What's that?
The Manzan is a whole lot bigger than.
It's about five times as long. You go up the upper end of the Manzan, it's like going up the Nile.
Well, that's a problem.
You know, I used to go in there a lot. But that'll just show you what I'm talking about. You know, Rob, what kind of numbers do you have on that place in the past?
We've got 2001 that Joe Cimino put together in the back. So it's a comparison that looks like from 2013 back to 2001, to give you some perspective there.
Yeah, well, I see the Elizabeth River back in 2001 caught almost 220,000 pounds. I don't know where the...
Anson caught about 68,000.
Yeah. You know, this number for 2013 reflects exactly what I've seen from 2001 till now. It's just been a sharp downhill run.
Yep.
There's too many crab pots up there, Mark, in that area. I know Mark's seen it in Lynnhaven. Where there used to be three or four crabs, and it's about 12.
Yeah, everybody's fishing over the limit too.
And part of that is because when Rob gets here, is the way the regulations have been made. The regulations have run everybody out of the middle of the bay into the tributaries.
And down here, the buffalo flukes run even further.
Yeah, that causes the same. The black sponges stuff.
You know what I mean? That runs even further out.
So, who does stick with the issue about the 2 million pounds? Does anybody, I mean, I said before, I don't think we'll get the money. So, what's the next, what's the answer?
I don't know, that's what I was asking Ken. Is anybody ever...
What's the answer? Are we buying tags, a big fine? But I still got...
I don't think buying the tags are expensive. No. There's programs all up and down the East Coast, a lot of the states like Massachusetts, they make the fishermen buy their tags. I forget, it's a minimal cost.
It's not expensive. Before we do that, we've got to address the replacement. I'm quite sure we could work that out. But that's got to be worked out before. I don't want to be working this out and messing up springtime and people's carpets. I mean, you know, we really don't have that much good time. When we're able to fish, we need to be able to fish enough, you know.
I agree.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to come up with anything. All you're talking now is suggestions. The thing is, you come up with your suggestion, and then you build the plan.
We're trying or doing trial programs, looking at stuff like this. I mean, because...
But that's what's got to be addressed, all of it.
If you put 425 crab pots down there, you can lose a lot more than 100 in a night. I mean...
I agree 100% with you. I'm not even getting into talking about boats. We used to do it on the ocean front. You're always telling me, just because everybody does it, you're talking. I mean, I've always been against tags. What they did in the Tonga before, they went and changed the tags. Everybody had his call, painted a certain color. And he had to just say that his bullet had been painted on his cabin. And that way it was easy for the inspector to come by. I mean, he could run down and go over the box and get, you know, a close estimate of what he had.
Well, Doug, yeah. I brought this up in one of these meetings about 20 years ago, and I thought the Tangierman were going to throw me out of the room.
Yes.
Jeff Crockett brought up the fact right then. He says, I got two different colors of buoys that I fish, one on one day and one on the next day. Or I can tell my lines, you know, that I'm not, if I got one line here and I'm not getting in the other line.
Sometimes you got to turn that fiber off.
What if
Well, you know, going back to those days, you always don't make excuses.
We got two right now.
You can get rid of them then.
When I was leaving the meeting last week, or whenever it was last month, two patrol officers rode down the elevator with me, and they said just what you said. They said, we'd love to see somebody have to identify their buoy color on their boat. Mm-hmm. You know, make it a whole lot easier for us. And just like this one guy told me, he's got three or four different colors, all with the same number on them. It's not like even, like Ken's told me, it's not like to have two licenses on a boat.
I mean, somebody got $40 invested in the pot. He's going to want to keep up with it.
Right.
And he couldn't mind identifying it.
No, in down in Florida, the huge number of pots they fish down there for stone crabs and those lobsters down there. You go to the fish houses down there, and everybody's buoys are displayed on the side of the fish house with the boat name. And sometimes they might have a bullet float and one of those little round styrofoam balls with it, or two styrofoam balls and a buoy float, and how they're painted. And they have a display on the fish house. This is so-and-so's.
Yeah,
this
all
is
the this one. Come by and say, all right, I'm the guy who's responsible to steal. I'm going to go to his. I know he keeps a good rig.
Well,
I mean,
if they're going to steal it, it's not going to make any difference what
kind of
buoy.
No way, hell. You think that they're lazy enough to steal, they're going to rob by. They're going to
tell us his secrets now.
No. Down here, I love keeping the old buoys to put on the new pot. Because down here, I'll tell you what. Now, you get a lot of people borrowing pots down here.
I got one now, believe
Trust me, you put a lot of new buoys, like you put 30 in your bag, I can promise you, they won't stay there 1 week. You can take that to the bank. Now, that's something that's got to be, if it's a tag, they can just pop off of yours. I mean, down here, I mean, I know y'all
deal with it. We had somebody steal 75 pots of us in one night.
Yeah, it's
so that was tags. I mean, I'd have to take me a week to get new tags.
They know whose pots to take. They know a thief knows what he's at.
We had a Northeaster. When the hurricane comes through, we lost 250 pots in one night.
That's what I'm saying. You can't,
And, I mean, we have to drive here and take particular, you know, I mean.
That's just something that.
I mean, I'm flat off. I'm not for tags.
I don't want people.
No way I'll go anything with tags.
I would love to do something that would stop the theft and things with everybody.
The fund will do that. But that's something we've got to talk about.
I mean, if you get mad at somebody, you can put them out of business by just pulling their tags out. Just ride that door and pull the tags out. That guy's out of business for the year.
That's what I'm saying.
And, I mean, we've got people down our way that would do that.
I kind of think that people down here.
I mean, there are people down there who put
jealous.
You out of business.
They're jealous. If they see somebody is out there catching
them. I guarantee you they go down the line, rip them tags out, and throw them off.
Hold on just a second. This comes river. Did they tag the pot and do
that?
I just want to take this moment to say that Joe Griss knows more about the recent proposal on tagging, but the original proposal back in 2001 was to have an automatic 10% above the tags you should have. It was realized that it wouldn't cover catastrophic loss. The system was designed to have the Marine Police, at that time the Marine Patrol, be notified through operations. No one gets in their car and comes down here to do that. Through operations, and the only thing the Marine Patrol, now the Marine Police, would have to be concerned with was whether they thought it was abuse of the police. In other words, would there be some people who would say they lost pots and really didn't? Now, you know that you can probably think in the back of your minds just what percentage of crabbers are really losing pots of any extent. And you probably know the commission, and I'm not advocating, I'm just letting you know that the commission would probably be able to establish that there was time for replacement of those tags. So I heard a couple scenarios where you keep extra pots in the yard. Those pots get out in due course, they get the tag. So I just don't want you to throw up roadblocks, even though, you know, you're having this discussion. The commission is not going to be a roadblock in this situation. So, you know, please consider that. The monetary part of it has been a roadblock. You know, that's been a roadblock to us. We have one full-time person on striped bass tags, pretty much when you pitch in the part-time help, it's probably a position where it's a full position monitoring strike pass transfers, permit changes, everything else going through that. And if any of you do have strike pass tags, you know it's a process here at the commissioner. So there is an administrative component. We can't get away from that. It is true that states do have the harvesters by the tags. The initial state, I think, probably was Maine with the lobster fishery, and they had it set up so that the tags could be purchased from the vendor directly, but a lot of the harvesters wanted to go through the agency, and what they paid through the agency was actually a couple cents more per tag, and that money went to law enforcement in Maine. So Maine's not the only case. Massachusetts has systems, other states as well. So I just thought it might be important to tell you that some of the roadblocks probably aren't there. Not a position from us, but just to, you know, kind of interject that for you.
Can I just make a comment? It seems to me that the problems you raised are real problems, but it seems to me that the same problems would have been faced or are being faced have been by the lobster fisheries and the other fisheries. So how have they dealt with those problems, losing pots, pot theft, and so on?
I mean, they're making a lot of money up there. They obviously, they're still ordering brand new boats and stuff. How many people down here do you see doing that? Obviously, their fishery must be in a lot better shape.
Well,
maybe they're not. Maybe they're not in the
problem. Yeah. No,
okay.
The spiny lobster. I know the spiny lobster
probably
has a lot of. The point is, how do they deal with it? Check with them to see how they deal with these problems. Look at the spiny lobster fishery offshore. And they're going to have the same weather problems. They're going to have hurricanes. And they're going to have theft problems and so on. So
how is North Carolina dealing with everything? They just run them up always, you know. And they, how are they dealing with everything? What's working so good down there that we're not able to?
I'm talking about the pot thing.
Oh, I'm just talking about in general. What are we? Maybe we should look into some of their laws and go after it more like they do, because it's obviously working good. They just send them up here by the truckloads and stuff, and, you know, work all year. But, you know, they don't have nowhere near no bushel limit, pot limits. They work, you know.
If they were sending them by the truckloads, it wouldn't have been $70 a bushel this
fall. Well, they said, they were getting them up where they, I mean.
Well, they did catch a lot better.
I mean, they were getting.
Well, they must be sustaining it.
They weren't as good as ours.
Because we didn't have none through Virginia. It was no, I mean, they were coming down here crabbing at the end, getting them. Of course they're going to pay something. It was nobody. Where were they going to get them from? You can't catch none. Your limit was so cut so far. It was too cold probably for the guys up the bay to catch them. And down here, oysters, $40, $50 a basket. Who in the right mind is going to go out there and pity mess around for 21 baskets of crab? Of course they have. Well, one or two people, yeah, you got some money. But that was why. It was no Virginia fishery this fall. I mean, the oyster business is booming. Of course, that's, you got all the people there. I mean, it worked out for what one or two was doing it. Yeah, we got money. But if it would have been people crabbing, you wouldn't have got nothing. Dude. That's why the crab price was cheap, because Jim Casey and them, they were getting them from North Carolina cheap. You know, it was happening. If things wouldn't have happened like they would have happened, you would have had a terrible fall. Everything just lucked out. And the only reason we got any money for them this fall, you would have been business as usual if it was everybody crabbing.
They had crabs in North Carolina early. Then they didn't have much all summer. Then they had crabs in the fall.
The crabs
they were sending up here, I mean, they were big as your foot. They just went, I mean, yeah. He just told me they couldn't get his numbers on them.
But they never used it.
But they definitely can yield. They kill our market. You've got to be competitive with them, because ain't nothing. Gas is getting cheaper and stuff. I mean, the crabs going up the road, you've got to be able to compete with them. If they can get them, just because you have Virginia crabs, you know, that's not good enough for them to just, they're not going to say, well, your crabs are worth more because everybody here is on.
Well, Ken, here's what I'm looking at. You know, and I know we have to compete with everybody. We have to compete with even further down than that early in the year.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But what I don't want to do is I don't want to end up having to compete against myself anymore. And I've been doing that for the last 20 years. You know, if there's any way that we can keep what we've got and not lose it by getting things a little bit
and
under control.
If all the crabs were bought and sold in the state of Virginia, we could do that. It would be simple.
No. I'm talking about just having something to sell and not having to go through these long dry spells. You know, in my case.
Well, I mean,
In my case, I've been doing this for a while. Just crab potting alone. I used to do well enough just crab potting alone that I really didn't have to do anything else. Well, now when crab potting stops, my money stops. So I need something else to do. 20 years ago, it wasn't like that.
Yeah,
you know, I could make enough money crab potting that I'd have everything paid for all the way through until the next year. And why is that? I can't blame that on North Carolina.
Well, no, I stepped out when I quit college and I walked onto a drudge boat. I was employed 365 days a year in the state of Virginia.
Well, you know, I did the same dumb thing you did. I only did it. I did it on rockfish back in the early 70s.
But
so, you know,
like I'm saying,
if you should be dumb, you got to be tough.
Well,
so.
That's what I'm saying. Well, they keep taking, and I don't understand. You know, that's the problem.
Well, all we're getting to is trying to figure out how to overcome a little bit of a situation where we don't need all the sheep eating all the grass 1 year and then have to starve for five.
I feel like the case for a lot of people got bad blood for one or two people in different areas, and that's why I've been always picking and plucking and harping on this. I think that, maybe it is that bad everywhere else, but I just don't see that many people. I mean, I can't, we're in a popular crabbing area according to these numbers, and I just don't. Pot tagging, I mean, it doesn't make a difference, like I said, because I'm going to do the same thing I'm doing now. You know, it doesn't make a difference to me. But I'm just saying I just don't think that's true. I don't think that can give us more crabs or let us work anymore than what we're working. And that's what I want. I want to be able to work more. That's what we need to get Virginia back to a continuous
year-round fishery.
But you've got to be able to be competitive. You still got to be able to be competitive. Virginia has a lot of crabs. Chances are North Carolina's going to have a lot of crabs.
You don't think effort has any effect?
I'm not down here, no. I don't. I just don't see where all the crab is. I mean, look at where all these crab houses, where are all these crabs going? I mean, look at the scope of the fishery and what it was to what it is now. I mean, I don't look at the, go talk to the people to sell bait. You know, where all their crabbers go? Go talk to the people to sell supplies. Where all, they're not there. Go talk to the railway.
Well, from the time I started in it until it started to go downhill, I watched effort go right on up. Now listen, I watched it go right on up. You were talking about the Nasman River. When I first started feeler potting back in the 80s, there were two guys feeler potting in the Nasman River. One of them was Wes Crockett and his cousin, his dad used to run the little restaurant that was over there behind Lawson Brothers, the fuel back there, over there where you tied and served them. And another guy that Big Eddie used to used to fish with Kenny Epp. And we peelered in the Lafayette and in the Elizabeth River a little bit and did real good. Nobody else was peeler popping. The place had only been open 4 or 5 years from keep on closing, all of it. And one guy died, so I didn't feel too bad about going over to the Nassau because I filled his void. We made all the money you wanted there. Within 2 years, or maybe 3 years, the whole place got covered up with not 200 or 300, but thousands of pots from folks from up the road. Most of them from Saxis, a lot of them from the other side. And they sucked the whole place dry. We'd go over there for, a month. I'd peel it from sometime the last week in April, catch a few crawl-ins, not many, until the end of the run over the Nassau. And then we quit and go hard crab popping because there were plenty of hard crabs. We had good Maryland market. We'd pick all our stuff up and go catch Jim crabs. When that bunch started coming down there, that's all they did at home. So that's all they did down there. And they would come with thousands of pots. You could walk on just like we're sitting around this table. And after 2 or 3 years, I had just quit going over there because there wasn't any peelers. I built a boat just to crab with over there. I don't even need it anymore. I sold all my peeler pots. You know, they were all rusting out on the trailers.
It went with these thousands and thousands of crab pots, peeler pots, and 300.
But you don't think that had any effect on it?
Well, what about the stone cold dead? Right now, it ought to be crabs coming out of the water. They ought to be knee deep to a giraffe.
I think it got hurt so bad that it's just taken it this long.
The fish. That's the problem, Pete.
No, I think that might be part of it, but I don't think that that's all the answer. It's just like that guy that got that the police killed in up there in New York that's been in the news. I think that we got the crabbing situation down so bad and just held it down that it couldn't breathe. You know, you didn't kill it all the way. You just pushed on it hard enough that it just, and you're still pushing on it a little bit, that it can't catch its breath and come back. Now, effort's probably finally gotten down far enough now because only the diehards are in it.
I mean, I bet it went 200 people all summer long.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Listen, I went over there a couple of years ago. The reason that is there wasn't any to catch. You can't go over there and do it if there's nothing to catch. We had a good Young of the Year index a few years back, and I thought, oh, man, we're going to have some peelers in the Nazis. This is good. I got all my stuff loaded up, went and rented a slipway up there, cleaned all my pots up, cleaned my boat, went up there. When I got done up there that spring, I had to go over to Harbor Freight and buy one of these great big crowbars to get my tail out between my legs. Because I've been over there before and got cut off at 9,000 crabs a day. You know, that's fishing. And we did this years and years and years because there was just a limited number of us, and we didn't get out of hand. But it can't stand everybody doing the same thing for so long. It's an eventuality. It's happened. It's Mother Nature. It's been tracked and done like this for centuries. Somebody didn't make that story up about those sheep. It happens in everything. So all you've got to do is get it to a point somehow. It might not be pot tags, where we can keep this from happening again if we're starting to come back now.
I understand, but I'm just saying, it seems like we have ever had a whole lot of this. Maybe everybody's lying about how many people used to do it, how many crabs it was. I don't know. I know
we've got to go 5-10 on every
side. Okay. Now it is nothing. It just seems to me, because crabs are out in the river, they don't know how many crabs out in the doing. So it seems to me if effort really had that much to do with it, the crabs right now, I mean, we shut down a whole fishery.
Hold on a minute. What did I tell you, McDonald?
You got to
look at fishing strategy. Had us changed over the years. See a bunch of shit. Back in the 60s, man had a 150 pot rig. He had a big rig.
Am I correct?
Anybody in this room, old head, know about that? Okay. Over
the
years.
Yeah, you didn't have a pot farm.
Yeah. Okay. We didn't have GPSs. We couldn't go. We were all locally the way we were going. And everybody's airline skiffs, GPS, pot pullers, 400 pots. He's hit the nail on the head. He's been beat it down so far. How is it going to come back up? Telephones, everybody said they don't even look about that. How many people here call each other? Hey, man, I'm on crabs. Look at you smiling. Huh? Used to be 20 years ago. Nobody called nobody. Nobody knew where everybody was catching crabs. Everybody needs to sit back and look at how all this has evolved to where we're at right now. Period.
I mean, I've seen it.
I've been in there for 30 years. 30 years. I've seen it all. So, as far as pot tagging, how are we all going to get around this situation? Am I wrong?
But do we think, why are we going to go with a pot tag if you got a time limit, you got a catch limit?
But how are you going to enforce it? BMRC, back then when it was started, was designed for what? One thing. What's going on right now is the oyster industry. Now the law enforcement's got oysters, they got fish, they got crabs. Can't everybody be there? Laws are meant to be there to be broken. Well, I'm sorry, that's the mentality of it today.
If it was overfished, if less crab pots in the bay now than I've ever seen.
Well, that's
less crabs in your bay, too.
But it's less crabs. Well, you know.
And the sad thing is that your waterman today says, well, I'd like to see it a few crabs because I can make more money off
but
of it.
But the main problem is, man,
and
if
you're
bring
looking
them back,
at just going, getting rid of that resource.
If you do bring them back, what are
you
going to do
with them?
That's exactly. There's no picking houses left.
What would you do?
You look at what are you going to do? If you catch a ton of crabs, you can't, they're worthless. They're going to come back four days and spray them crabs.
But that will come back.
Ain't nobody going to open up no crabs.
Call John Benny right now and ask him how many deep crabs.
Yeah.
He done sold the
Casey, how many crab houses they had?
So we're better off with no crabs.
You're better off with a certain limit of crabs. But you flood the market with crabs, there's nothing to do with them. There's no crab houses. You're going to, everybody's going to run up to Maryland, and they're going to give you $20 a bushel for them.
Or were North Carolina going to take all the market?
Maryland was paying $100 a bushel for every crab we bought this summer. Why? Because there wasn't that many, and it was supply and demand. That's the way any business works, supply and demand. You get a boatload of crabs and take them to Maryland, they're going to give you $10 a bushel for them. You have to buy them at all. I've been that. We used to drive crabs. You got a truckload of crabs? I've been up there before. I had to come back with the crabs in the truck.
So you're satisfied with it like it is?
I had a good year.
How many new oyster shucking houses and oyster places have opened up since oyster have been out?
I mean, being in the crab business, do you know that only 1% of crab meat eaten in America is from America? 99% of the crab meat you eat in restaurants and stores come from foreign countries.
We've used up our
40%.
Yeah.
We live on the nation's largest estuary.
I've seen excitement.
We're going by, the agenda time, or
well,
we actually started.
I don't know how you feel about what you want to discuss. And there are a lot of things coming out
because everybody's got to say.
I think we could move on to another item, and then I think after this meeting,
Questions to the committee members. Y'all want to move forward with One Trev next or Sanctuary?
I think we beat this one for pretty good.
Yeah, we beat it to death. Let's move on to with Rob here on our Sanctuary.
Yes, Rob.
I just wanted to make one last comment that maybe you're missing. If you look at the global fisheries, when you have sort of limited entry and you can control efforts, the ones who are in it are the ones who profit the most. Because then you have, you know, the amount of gear you have. You're usually, your catch per unit effort goes up. So it gets better. So you don't have to worry about the whole allocation. I mean, down the road it's going to be allocation too. But that's just something to keep in mind.
The problem is you're on an eastern seaboard market. I mean, that's the thing. If all the crabs in Virginia and down south, everything's moving.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the Virginia crabbers, especially, you know, those of you who are, you know, you want to have a certain number of
pots. Tell me what you meant by down the road there's going to be allocation.
Yeah.
Well, the watershed agreement, which
I was asking Ron. He was the one that said.
Well, this was, I mean, they
but
could
I mean,
you
can answer it.
Well, they could tell you.
Well, Ron looked at me, so I took that as
okay.
a cue.
All right.
Since I'm involved in that, 2018, there at least has to be an evaluation of allocation among the three jurisdictions. That's what exists right now. So, so that will happen. The evaluation will be there. Obviously, it's to the benefit of the jurisdictions to start working towards that end. But it's a very good
likelihood that in 2018 you're going to have an allocation of how many crabs can be caught in Virginia.
Just evaluate it.
It's an evaluation first. Because it is your meeting, but it's an evaluation of allocation. I would imagine by then there may be some options. Then I imagine there would be some, let's call it political pressure, to come up with an allocation system. I mean, that's one likelihood.
I mean, you're in fishery management. Ron, you're in fishery. What is the likelihood that that Virginia, Maryland, and the Potomac River, what do you think the likelihood is that everybody's going to be allocated?
Everyone by jurisdiction would be allocated.
Yeah.
The jurisdictional part.
Yeah.
The rest of that's going to be to the jurisdictions.
But the odds are pretty great that it's going to be allocated what you can catch in the bay.
So us having no grabbers right now is really going to hurt us.
No.
We get all of our allocations.
Complicated question. because we have to get to 2018. But yes, I mean, personally, I think there's going to be allocation. If it doesn't happen in 2018, it's going to happen shortly thereafter. To answer Ken, we don't know the mechanisms yet. It's not going to be your straightforward, here's your landings or your harvest for the last 10 years or 5 years. That's not going to work. There's been regulations. So that's the next step for all the jurisdictions, to figure out what that mechanism is to get to the evaluation.
Okay, now answer this for me. So Virginia's given, say, 100 million pounds of crabs they can catch. That will be their allocation. What happens if in Virginia you go and you catch 120 million pounds of crabs?
They'll probably take the other 20 million off.
Well, the thing is that, yeah, so to keep that from ever happening, it just makes sense to me that every crabber is going to be allocated to where this 100 million pounds comes to, so that you will not go over.
Well, that might work out. The other thing that works out, we've got a number of fisheries like horseshoe crab, black sea bass, fishery summer flounder, to where it's simply a quota management. And the track record is pretty good. But that is a way. I mean, you could go that way. In 2009, there was talk of going to even individual pot quotas, individual day quotas. All that got pushed aside pretty much by the regulations that had to be put in place. So, you know, we can talk about that as we go through this. I think it's a good question. I think it's right on the horizon. All this is coming up. And but
the thing is, if it's going to happen, then we should be planning for that now.
Yeah.
But and part of that planning is this effort that we're talking about.
How you going to... All these other fisheries that are usually, like, are they competing with everybody? I mean, blue crabs are caught from Texas to, like, New York, okay? So you're competing with everybody around there. All these other fisheries, like scallops and stuff, well, that's all fine allocation because the market, it's going to all control itself. You allocate our fishery, and the states of the South don't. And they're pumping all these crabs. We're going to have a fishery that's worth nothing. It don't matter how many crabs. And nothing's nothing.
Yeah, Ken's idea of 120 million instead of 100 million. It would be great if we could think that's what we had, obviously. But, you know, while he was saying that, I was thinking more likely what happens if you're under by 20% or 30% in a year. And the idea is, like every other fishery, no one's really going to do much about that. You're not going to get a credit back for that. Because the way the allocation is going to work, it's going to have to either be on a one-year basis, it's going to have to depend on the abundance, it's going to have to depend on the things that we have now at school.
So yeah, but if you came under your allocation, if you're on an allocation, you're not necessarily, you're going then to an output control and not an input control. Mm-hmm. So if you're that way, you could, where you ordinarily would have fished, say, 200 pots or 300 pots, if you're on allocation, you could fish 500 pots. And if you didn't catch your allocation, then that just proves that the crabs weren't there at the time. Yeah, I mean, you would have been doing the same thing you're doing now when people are here overfishing pots. I mean, if you go ahead and you sit there and say, we got a million pounds that we can catch or 100 million pounds that we can catch, and all of a sudden everybody throws out or enough crabbers throw out, you know, 1,000 pots, 600 pots, and you come up to 120 million. I mean, that's where the difference is, that you're going to have to get to a output control fishery if we go to allocations.
Not really.
Or you're not going to be able to manage it, because if you go over, you don't know what you're going to catch when you tell people they can put out 300 pots this year.
Here's the steps that have to be taken. We have to have an allocation. We will have a quota. And let's assume it's not 2018, it's 2019 or something like that. And, you know, we'll see what happens. Then we have a lot of cleaning up to do. Part of this effort control discussion, you're focusing on who's in the fishery, right?
Yeah, that's what it's
you also have to focus on who's not been in the fishery.
So I don't know whether, did they get the handouts? Okay, so you have handouts there for you to look at until next meeting. And what the handout should tell you is that there's a lot of effort out there that hasn't been applied to the fishery recently. And that's something, to get to where Ken is talking about, those types of cleanups have to happen.
And they have to happen now.
The effort that is there, there has to be a way to make sure that it doesn't come into the fishery. That's going to be a challenge, to say the least. You can imagine what kind of a challenge that's going to be. You've got a waiting list of 263 people or so who've been sitting on there. They haven't crabbed since 2003. And there they are on the waiting list waiting. You have maybe 70% of the crab pot eligible fishery folks. The rest of the 30% are sitting. For the peeler pot, it's even higher. So all those things have to be taken into consideration. You're just starting tonight on the straightforward, what I'll call straightforward compared to that, on who's in the fishery and why they're fishing so many pots, which we hear a lot from many, many people. Even at the commission, it's been said at the commission more than several times, just pot abuse. So there's two sides to this. To ever get close to knowing that you can manage through even an individual share or any type of approach. So,
how many other states have a blue crab allocation other than Virginia and Maryland, or even have one now, or would be included? Anybody, or are we just the first one?
I don't know of any offhand who go that way, but again, we're bound by what our governors sign into effect, and they signed the watershed agreement. And it says by 2018, you know, you shall have an evaluation strategy for this allocation. And you can probably guess where that leads. That leads to allocation. Maryland's already talking about it. We're certainly talking about it. If there can be time from now until you meet again, you know, I and my staff are going to start to think about this a little bit more. But this takes the commission as well. This is going to take the commission to get involved. In 1998, and I don't mean to go on, but in 1998, the commission, one of the commission members, a professor from UVA who was on the commission, said, we've got to get rid of some of this effort. And has anyone thought about that? And we need to look at ways, we need to get people out of here who haven't been productive. And that was really the last time that there's really been any push to look at this. It's called latent effort. You know, that's the last time. So that has to be looked at. It's a big challenge. This committee will be very good to talk about it. The Blue Crab panel has already started to discuss it. So I think it's important, to say the least, before we get to the type of situation that leads from allocation. So sorry to tie you up, Madam Chairwoman.
All right.
So, in other words, this is going to affect the 100% full-time work of watermen. I think
between now and 2019, that's what you got to figure out. Who's going to be in it and who's out?
Well, I mean, like right now, the regulations, the bulk of them are just affecting what one or two full-time crabber it is. Most time it's a part. I mean, we're basically managing it to be a part-time fishery or a hobby, basically. As far as being, I mean, we're basically getting away from trying to have a...
That's what we're trying to change.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying right now, it's basically managed to be basically a hobby.
But that's what we're trying to change.
Well, what happened, just to be brief on it, because we got to move on. With the drug industry, I watched it go from 450 boats to what it was when I left. And when they shut it down, and I don't mean no harm, the only way you can get a fishery back is when it's at rock bottom, because nobody wants to fool with it. I went right down to the last wire watching drop out 20, 30, 40, 50, 80 a year, the way we got to where we are today. Just like the scalloping industry, I was in that, right down to where you couldn't catch two baskets on an hour tow. Now look at it. But when they shut dredging down, the mistake was made. All the latent effort came out of the woodwork. Am I wrong, Rob?
No, not wrong.
That's where the mistake was made. The latent effort needed to be cut back right then. Just because cutting dredging out, That didn't help anything. All that did was raise numbers up, because Ron will say this. The same crab is caught the same place. They didn't do no more. They just robbed from Peter to give to Paul.
Yep.
Plain and simple.
You can't sell them at once.
Can't sell them at once. No, but we wasn't allowed to catch them. Then the late napper came up to Woodward. The same crab was caught, and then more was caught.
Got a lower price. You lost a year-round market where you were, something in
there. We've done that this year, too. We took just closed at the end of the year and took one or two full-timers and cut their limit right on down.
Well, that's what this is for. And now that
crabs in the springtime, there's going to be a heck of a lot more people crabbing this springtime than what was when I put my pots up.
Sure, it will be.
So what did we achieve? I mean, that's the kind of stuff I think we need to work where we're getting the most maximizing our resource. We're just devaluing the crab fishery little by little. When you see big-time people closing stuff going, that's not good. You know, and once it's gone, these people ain't coming back. You ain't getting new John Bennies and stuff like that. And you're not getting new people. Once you let this stuff go, it's gone. And I feel like we're getting to the point. I mean, these people aren't going to keep just sitting around saying, well, I hope next year, I hope they let the boys go to work. I hope to, you know, eventually these people are going to pull the plug, and then we don't have a fishery. If it goes all to the basket market, when you lose what one or two picking houses is left, and it looks like to me they're definitely on the way out, the writing's on the wall, and then you've really got nothing then. It won't matter because you'd have to catch so many then. When they find out up them roads where all these crabs are going, you've got to have them, you ain't got nothing. And
yes, we have to move on to sanctuaries. We're a little behind schedule starting. Discussion around is he opening or?
Well, we're starting sanctuaries. It won't take me but 5 minutes. But I learned something 8 years ago. I've been paying a long time. And Rob and Joe and Ron might learn from this too. I entered a oyster growing program where we put small hatchery oysters in bags for growing. And I put out 300 bags in the fall, September. In the spring, I went back and looked at them. I had them on top of work, so the hurricane was coming up, so I took all the boats off and then put them in the September. And I went back in the spring and I pulled in, it was long about people, I guess, pulled in bags up, and all those bags had small crabs in them. And now they did it differently. They put a hole in all these cages and everything that small crabs had. But just because of the size of the bag and doing September, small crabs in it goes bad. Of course, they must have fed it a couple of times between September and October. And when I opened them up in spring, they were about this long. So I had to go through all those bags and untie them, get crabs and tie them back up. And going over 300 bags, unlike everybody else, I missed two or three where I didn't get all the crabs in. When I went back down in the fall, and during the summer, once I turned the bags over, went back down during the fall, man. I had a couple bags, and that small crab had stayed in, and he'd eaten all my little arms. One of them bags had a full-grown sook in it, with two sook, and a couple of them had little-sized gimmicks. What made me bring this up is I thought maybe the little crab that you did run them drugs in the winter, that would be the hot crab for the following year, but that's not so. That little crab that went in there in September, by September again, there was four mature crabs. So when you do your crab drugs, you can't forecast a year ahead of time, so you do a crab. And those ones that you catch at the end during the day, during the good season, that crab matures for that year. So I thought that was important information that I wanted to share with you, because a lot of the stuff I've been reading in the paper and the Bay Journal and everything, so what happened, all them scientists got together try to figure out what happens to that year class, or June or Fred, it was so high, more than 2012.
Yep.
It was going to be a big bump in 2013. Well, really wasn't a big bump in 2013, because Colin and Fred was either eating up a cost in 2012. And how those numbers got into that was because of that hurricane that we went through, where we had 20 inches of rain in the Potomac and the Rappahannock and those areas that flushed in crabs over the creeks and the hands of the rivers back in the bay. That's my philosophy, but this here ain't no philosophy, that's fact.
Yeah, we know that about 10 to 20% of the crabs mature in the first year when they're just over 1 year old, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something we already
You already knew that, so I didn't teach you. Well, I learned from myself, but when I read these things in paper, where there were so many crabs in the bay, they ate each other up, but the tides took them out in the ocean after they've been in the bay already. It makes you wonder, some of these committees that will sit around and look at this diet, they ain't always kosher.
We went over this a little bit last meeting there about the value of the newer sanctuaries that are in the upper part of the bay, and then we have one down in the country, versus the effect that it's had in changing the fishery from larger boat fishery to skiffs and moved everybody up in the rivers, working more on male crabs and peels. Yeah. Do you think that the cost benefit analysis that you would do on that would still prove that the sanctuaries are worth more than if you get away with them and let some of the folks get out of the rivers?
I mean, I think that's something you've got to. Okay, so my initial thought about the sanctuaries that we needed, the large sanctuary that we got in place in 2001.
Yeah,
two expansions. So those, as I mentioned, protect, you know, roughly 75% of the spawning stock during the spawning season. The other parts of the sanctuaries got put in place were trade-offs, right? So I think what you can do is you can go back. I would not be against examining certain smaller parts, and meaning from Ben from the scientific side, and looking at trade-offs versus other aspects. I mean, we haven't been against opening or reopening some form of the dredge fishery or whatever, but I think you've got to do it on a case-by-case basis. So I wouldn't say that we absolutely need, 100% of the spawning stock protected. You got to protect them as they're coming down and so on. So I think it's worthwhile examining that if you guys have certain.
But they have to come out of the tributaries.
Right.
Well, if you've increased the number of pots in the tributaries or increased the effort.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'd be totally open to looking at that.
Well, you know, I'm looking at that. What year did those sanctuaries go into place?
2000 was the large expansion, and then that was followed in 2001.
I'm looking at numbers in my area. This is what I saw. That effort went up.
Right.
And the Elizabeth River in 2001, there were 219,000 pounds of crabs caught. 12 years later, there's 47,000 pounds of crabs. With a lot more effort.
What I'm saying is, I agree with you that.
I mean, we've worked. There's so many people in there. We've just worked it down and worked it down and worked
it
down.
And it's worthwhile. So if you can make some kind of
suggestion. And the sponge crab regulation too forces people further away, because if you could keep the brown ones, everybody, a lot of people wouldn't go. They would stay out there and catch them, and some of them are picking out or do whatever. They wouldn't be running up the river to try to run away to go catch something that they could sell. That's another reason. That's like another increase of sanctuary all on its own.
I think what you would need to do, from my angle, and not from staff, is come up with some suggested changes and how you could balance that. You know, what is it that you want that would make the fishery more economically productive, totally for that, and kind and then we could evaluate them scientifically. Is that it?
See, we're getting
well,
to a point now, and some of this discussion
around the sanctuary, Rob. I mean, Pete's just giving you numbers. I don't think it's our job to come back at this for a balance. And your sanctuary has pushed everybody in, and you're asking us to balance it on how to change it.
I'm asking you to do that economically. What is it that would help you economically in terms of the fishery, and then we would evaluate it scientifically. That's what I'm saying.
Well, see, what we did, and this happened some everywhere, is you end up, and this is being discussed inadvertently here because we're talking about an elimination of picking houses, and the higher value product is going to be large males for city market, and your larger, better quality females for Oriental city market. If that's what we're left with, we need to be able to ensure ourselves somehow that we're going to be able to have enough of those type crabs to make some money on. And if you've shoved everybody up the rivers, and I've watched my catch go just like these numbers. This reflects, just what I've seen. We're down to less than half of what we used to catch. Sure, we're getting a little bit more for it, but your fuel has gone up, your pots have gone up, your bait's gone up, everything's gone up, the cost of motors, boats, and everything. And we're not getting the economic benefit from the product we're catching now to make up for the loss of volume. So we need to do something to increase the quality of the product we have by getting some of the pressure off of it, at least for part of the year. You can't institute upriver sanctuaries in a trade and think you're going to benefit this because you haven't. You're doing just what you did. You're just moving the effort back and forth. You're just squeezing the balloon at this end and this end and this end and this, and it's just moving back and forth. You haven't accomplished much, and the fishery itself has changed. There's more people working in smaller boats than there used to be. Everybody used to have a big boat.
But it's easier to catch those crabs too, like out there at the shed up there when they go catch them, like on Shed and Jimmy's and Shed.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's easy for them to catch them than once they hard enough. I mean, when you're forced to.
Because they're voracious and hungry.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're going to take more up there. You know what I'm saying? You're going to catch more of that as versus if you're working on the quality. Somewhere that they're just a lot easier to catch a pot, you can sell a pot full of them.
That's probably sending
shit. But anyway, for me, to go from being able to crab down at the lower end of the bay off Little Creek or Lynn Haven or wherever, where we've always worked in the past, to go from making some money to having to make zero because it just gets shut off the next day, then having to move up the river and you know that you'll get a few days up there and then that's just going to be worked down. It's and seeing no more improvement than we've seen over 13 or 14 years, and I do a metal cost-benefit analysis, and I see what my books look like at home. It's not been beneficial for me.
Right, so what I'm saying,
and I don't think it's been beneficial for the resource.
Well, on that I would disagree, but
where's the numbers? Where's the numbers? We get all these dredge surveys and all this stuff, and what my books show me at the end of the year every year is it's still going like that.
I mean, the Carolina Skiff has forced people. I mean, you can't notice. I mean, that's why everybody thinks it's the saturation of pots now, because every creek and everything you go in around everywhere, that's where everybody's crabbing at. People aren't out in the bay. You push that. That's why everybody thinks it's a lot of pots. And I'm sure you're going to catch the crabs. If you go pile everybody into a river, you probably will. You can go pile everybody up in the bay and never notice the difference. It's forcing everybody up there. That's the problem. The crabs never come back out to the bay where the big boats and stuff used to catch them. Those crabs don't come back. You know, everybody used to be up there. They'd be waiting in the fall of the year. Crabs would come on back. But now, they can't come back. Like, they can't come but one time.
Okay, you're missing what I'm saying. I'm saying I'm not married to the size of the sanctuary. That there's a certain size that it needs to be. And if you guys have certain things that would be economically productive for you, I think it's up to you to say, okay, we would like to have some kind of more.
Economically productive for me is having a little bit more resource. And I'm not seeing a gracious improvement in the number of crabs bay-wide since we've had this system. and I've watched it get worse because of the upriver pressure.
Well, what
the pressure that's on the crab, and all of you sitting down here know it, is the predation.
Yeah.
And that's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse because, well, you're in a different area than we are.
Ah, we're a bit right up right now.
Well, I'm talking about...
You don't think the catfish is a problem?
No, catfish is a problem.
But I can tell you, that's a croaker will smoke one.
That's brought all this bone smell. The croaker and the red drum coming up. I mean, they were here.
Now, the croakers won't.
Not this year.
Well,
they'd already done the damage.
Everybody's pointing their fingers at something. It's just too much pressure. Period. It wasn't no predation back in the 60s and 70s.
I can show you where I was sitting at dock getting less than $20 a barrel for my crab, sitting there dredging crab, not getting nothing for them.
Back
zero.
In
back in the 90s.
The greatest sanctuary that we ever had was in the James River in the 70s. That's because the whole thing was closed.
But y'all don't think it'd be better to take the tributaries? I ain't talking about the main branch of the river, but all the ditches all the way up the coast of the river where the feelers are and all the shedded crabs that have no value, no weight, make the sanctuary smaller and cut up the distributaries? Where all the little crabs is on?
Well, that's what we're getting at. He's saying we need to come up with balance.
I'm not saying it's going to fix it, but it ain't nothing I've seen in the last 20 years fixed it. The cold rings, the black sponge, the pot limit, the hour of the service, I ain't seen that fix it. Everybody, y'all talking about allegations. If they're going to go to allegations, are we still going to have the cold ring? Or ain't a cold ring, it's a state ring. So they don't call it, you still get a ticket. Same law we've always had. That's just a double law. All that does is let a lot of mature soaks out. You still can't sell less than a 5-inch jimmy disc. Same law we've always had. The back cushions didn't help. So when you go to allegations, are all them regulations going to be lifted, or do you want to have them or fall on them?
That's the way it
in?
Should be, because you're going to have an allocation. You ought to be able to fish in the sanctuary
years,
wherever you want.
You
when you catch a crab, it's
going to take care of itself, because it won't be no problem now. You look around the table. He's the youngest waterman here. The youngest. 20 years. Hey, I'm 46 years old. I'll be on my way out. Jimmy Dean, on his way out.
20 years.
I'm on my way over there.
That's what I'm saying. You look at it. It's 15, 20 years. How many watermen you going to have?
I've got a 21-year-old. And I refuse to let him get on the boat.
I've been here
he went to college
years.
Kicking and screaming, but you are not going to make your living on the water. And I mean, I don't know of any parent that wants their child
around
on the water.
20 years ago, I was set
to
predation looks like to me, isn't there something swimming around and ain't got no business being there, the one that introduced mm-hmm. I mean that's the you can't argue with so much on the natural predators. I understand that. I'm not going to sit here and argue something that God put there. Mm-hmm. But you take something that does not belong there, you know, that's a big problem. For me, I see them boys up there doing that electrofishing, catch 6,000 in an hour. Mm-hmm. They're a lot better crabbers than we are. They got no coal ring, no limitations, no size limits. You know what I mean? They're up there. I mean, that's where all your stuff, we're feeding the fish. I mean, I feel like we've done stuff, and I just think that we're not giving the crabs a chance because they're not getting big. And I understand we can't do nothing about rockfish, and I understand we can't do nothing about puppy drum or croaker because they're federal, but they're also natural. I'm not saying that necessarily that is, you know, I'm not saying it helps. But it looked like to me, them blue catfish, that should be addressed before our fishery is a federal disaster, and yet we can't go get a non-native predator. Is up there swimming. What other predator in the state of Virginia, non-native, can we not go hunt and kill fish other than the blue catfish? I don't think
the game fish a certain size.
Huh?
Didn't they stop them from doing that?
Well, now you know it's managed not by VMRC. The the authority for blue catfish is the game department.
Well, what about from your standpoint? How come nobody pushes? That can't be good. Them things get, how big
are
they?
We are pushing.
Everyone has been pushing
from
different directions.
Look, what y'all are doing is, I mean, their population's ballooning, and obviously, you know, you were in VMRC alone. You know what's, I mean, something's going on. It's not the regulation. I mean, I can't, does anybody in here really think that there's a home run regulation out there? Because I would like to hear, because that saves us all the time. Does anybody in here got the home run? Because, I mean, what haven't they tried? They've tried everything on God's green earth. You got pot limit, bushel limit, times you can work, small season. You shut down a fishery, okay? You know, we're looking for this home run regulation. I would love to find it. Who wouldn't? We come here, sit
that's
talk
we're
for 15, 20 minutes,
and
we'd all go.
Well, it's back to the catfish. We've got to get rid of them.
I'm just saying that's where you're. What's the Lindy? It sounds like, I mean.
14, roughly.
You know, that's these crab, little crabs and stuff. We're feeding the fish. I mean, they're about to. I can't, because, you know, it's hard for me to think. I mean, we see a lot of little crabs, and it's blowing my mind. Since, you know, I knew we had a bad, you know, it was fine. But I would have bet any man on God's green earth. The amount of little crabs that I've been seeing over the years, past few years, they just never turn in. I mean, we're not getting a shot at them. Regardless of whether I can't sell them or something, even if I have to turn them loose, we're not getting a shot at them. And that's the problem that I'm having. That's why I get so upset, because, you know, we're managing on this other end. And I think we've done, I mean, I just feel like we've done everything. We get, a crab will thrive. He's designed to be a feeder for the whole chest, you know, that's what stuff eats on. And I just think that we're putting too much pressure on them up there, and I don't think necessarily believe it's crabbers or nothing else. Because I just don't think it's nowhere near the fishery, no matter if everybody in here was setting 1,000 pots apiece. I don't believe that the amount of effort is out there, and the crabs don't live but a couple years. I just feel like the crabs should have really responded to the amount of regulations and what we have done.
Where are the little crabs going? I know you're saying the fish eat them, but where else are they going? There's another predator out there, and you're saying that these little crabs aren't.
They're not, because they're getting gobbled up. And then what one or two does, some of them get big. They've obviously enough, some of them are getting big because we're still catching them.
What about the peeler?
Well, the peeler industry, you know, they're not. If the peeler industry was really doing so great, you know, and they were catching all these little crabs, you wouldn't see a bunch of shed tanks on Craigslist for sale. You wouldn't see them throwed up in the bushes. You wouldn't see these masses. That's not, you know, this fishery, that used to probably was a big deal. When it was trailer loads, I can definitely buy into that. I can buy, but where we're at, I'm telling you, it's good peeler area. Does anybody in here think our black crab, James River from the Ghost Ships down? You know, that's good peeler bottom. I mean, these, we're not seeing. So, you know, if that was the case from my end, like, you know, I have a peeler pot license. They got peeler pots too. If that was so great, you know, I'd be saying, go ahead, do what you want with the blue crabs. I'm going to milk up on these peelers. That's all you want. You know, they're not getting to that stage even. You know, they're not even getting to that big. I'm talking about these little, like he was talking. Hell, he was doing a service. He was just keeping them from the predators. I mean, that's the crabs that I'm talking about that aren't getting the chance. We're not getting a crack at them. You know, your regulations aren't getting a chance to save them because they're not getting there. And I believe it's more the blue catfish than anything else, because Mother Nature, you know, she pretty much designed herself, and she put the other stuff here. We put that there. And that's why I have a big problem. And I don't see why, you know, I just feel like, somebody's on y'all's end. Somebody should be pushing this issue, because, I mean, how is that taking precedent? I mean, maybe that's why there ain't as many menhaden. Maybe that's why it's not as many rockfish. You know, maybe that's the reason. I see the article in the paper the other day about we have a problem with rockfish. Well, maybe it's because all these fish that are going up there are getting gobbled up by these vacuum cleaners.
There's a lot being done. Let me just respond to that. I'm not sure where you get the idea that we're not. My big focus right now is on predation and habitat. Those are the two main things that we're trying to push that to get the ecosystem-based management. There are some major efforts to try to really ramp up the commercial fishery, the budding commercial fishery for blue catfish.
But
as an ecologist, I'll tell you this, what I've seen with the blue catfish after the introduction, it's going to be hard as heck to eradicate. I think eradication is impossible.
You turn a jag, get him in.
But I think control.
You turn them loose on them, they can get them. Like that electric 6,000 fish an hour.
Right now what's keeping the fishery down is the market. They're trying to establish the market so that they will be able to take that. We were talking to the
There's a, there's so much being done about the blue catfish now. I mean,
but I mean, is anything we're going to sit here and do really going to be fruitful? When
well, you know, if you've got to $500,000 to put in your processing plant and then you can establish the market, then you know,
the
we've got somewhere to go.
We're talking about
they
money for grab pot tags and everything else. I mean, I'm just
but
saying,
I mean, it's, but people are working on
it. We got all
this
money to go grow oysters and do that. That's what we did with a federal disaster. I picked up one or two.
Well,
old,
I tell you something. It's
in the
what happened to the money that John Bull has for the catfish?
I mean,
anybody comment on that?
I think Madam Chairwoman is about to tell us that we
are
moving to the
minutes?
Third topic. Is that what you were going to say, Madam Chairwoman? And
are we breaking before the third topic?
I want to do a 10-second summary of the sanctuary, which is what you really need to talk about next time or what you've talked about before. Rob tried to say it a couple of times. Are there areas that don't need to be part of the sanctuary? Are there certain times in certain areas that don't need to be under the May 16th to September 15th. Those have been the big issues. The third one was the ocean extension. That's been an issue a couple times. So next time, I hope you'll talk about that. There's nothing wrong with things you talked about. I think it's great. But, I mean, those are the kind of ideas. The other thing, well, the other thing that's been brought up, and then, Dan, I'm done, is there has been a thought by several folks that I've heard where maybe the historical sanctuary is something that should be a longer closed harvesting season. You know, that's been talked about as well. I'm just talking about the ideas that have come up.
Can I ask you something about that?
Yes.
You've got control over the dates.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have control over the boundaries?
Yep.
And you can change the boundary.
Well,
and
the code boundaries of the historical sanctuary.
You can change.
There. No.
Okay.
That would have to be changed by legislation.
They don't have total control over the dates either.
Right.
Oh, you don't have total control over
well,
the
dates? Well, I mean, we're
able
to modify
it
the
they can't
dates
make it any shorter.
Earlier, which we did to May 1st and then May 16th.
Well, you know, you keep talking about making that, I've heard, a permanent sanctuary. You know, I speak for myself, and I can't speak for you or anybody else, but, you know, I'd say shut down the middle of the bay from, like, first island down below, but give us a 30-foot contour.
Well, that's the kind of thing that would help me. If you say,
let's change that, you have to go to the General Assembly. So why don't you all approach the General Assembly about giving you...
Well, I mean, I think we want to hear from everyone next time.
Okay.
And have that type of discussion.
So if you guys can think of, here it is, let's have this be year-round. Because then what that does is lets us model, okay, then the females that are there are going to be able to reproduce a second year. So we can figure out what that...
Well, the only way I've thought about that was if you took the old sanctuary, if, like...
You've discussed this years ago about changing the law.
The historical law.
Yeah, and then eliminate the other ones. But if you took that old one and made it, you know, modified it a little bit,
well,
and made it year-round, because...
So what about the people that live in Little Creek or down... I mean, I don't live in our crab down there, but...
But
I mean,
if they modify
the miles,
if they modify the lines, we can live with it, believe me.
Here's the thing that's irritating
about.
Don't, is
okay,
for how long now? For 10 years, we've had to save all these crabs in the fall. Or you can only catch this many, or you got to quit the middle of November, or you got to do
right
this, that, and the other. And then you let everybody from Maryland and everywhere in the whole bay come down here and crab in the sanctuary in the spring. So what have
yeah
you done?
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. I've
year,
never been in favor
was,
of that.
I wanted yeah the last meeting. I just did not see what we accomplished. But
we're not accomplishing anything by arguing amongst each other.
That's just...
Okay, so if you can say, hey, this area would be good as a year-round sanctuary, I can go ahead and...
Well, I'd like to see if there's any value to that. If we're not going to get any value out of it, I can't see doing it.
No, but what I'm saying, we can model that and say, okay, here's how many crabs we're going to save in excess of what we save now, and then here's what you have to work with in terms of altering other parts of the sanctuary or other regulations. That's what I'm saying. That's what I want to hear from you. What is it that you can deal with, you know, work with, then I can work with that to tell you here's what you have to
well
work
that's
with.
That's more than we've ever known before, that you're flexible on this.
Well, that's what I was trying to say.
Well, we're here.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not married to the whole thing. There's a certain...
Well, you just got divorced.
It's like the times of charm. Oh, boy.
All right. We summed it up. Everybody ready to move on?
Well, we got a lot.
Can I make sure you understand? I didn't say I'm not married to a sanctuary. I said I'm not married to the whole sanctuary.
Right.
All right. Good. Just want to make sure.
Last item on the agenda, sponge crabs.
We're going to take a break or we're going to finish this thing in 45 minutes.
Yeah, we had it on the agenda to take a break. We're early, but...
Yeah, Johnny Graham called me, by the way, which I wanted to pass on, and he was asking what the sponge crab issue is all about, and I told him, frankly, it's just an open discussion. He's very interested in the whole meeting. He did have a commitment, and so I told him I'd just fill him in. But, you know, he was not here last time, but he wanted to be here this time but couldn't be.
If y'all want to take it, we can go ahead and break down before we start.
Can I just add one other thing? One thing you need to be aware of, this is a particularly opportune time for you to be coming up with something like that because we're about to have the next stock assessment. And if we get some of these suggestions, we can actually assess them and make it part of the stock assessment to some degree. So it's an important time. If you wait until late next year.
Do any other states have, like, tributaries, like Gulf River sanctuaries, or limits on how wide the ditches are, how close you can set to the bank for crabbing? Do you know of anywhere
else? For crabbing, I know there's at least one or so other state that has sanctuaries. But
no, I'm talking about, like, up the river specifically, not by our middle, just up the river sanctuaries. Is there any kind of limit about where you can set pots?
You know that Maryland is.
That's what I'm saying. Is there, like, you know, certain depth in places or certain width of the river or something like that?
I mean, they do for podcast reduction devices.
135 is the men's room code, 135, and the opposite of that, 531, is the ladies' room. If we're taking a short break, is that the idea?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, the thing there is versus the cost of lack of assessment, talking to Tom Miller, this one shouldn't cost as much.
No, because we're not going to do as much research, so we're pulling all the research out of the 85K. It's part that we're not going to do, but that's the thought.
That was 2012 one.
Full assessment shouldn't.
2013, that one. That's the one that the catfish were puking them up that long. All one of them.
We've got 2 hours set aside on catfish tomorrow if
you want. You know, just like somebody was saying, I'll be on Medicare the last one. So, you know, I'm not long into that.
They're processing them. They're putting them in correctional facilities. They're putting them in there trying to get them
out of the city.
But they've got to go out of
state. I've got to go back and do something else, too.
So Kroger, some of the...
I used to be just fine doing this. I wouldn't have been really healthy with that, but I was doing okay.
They're willing to take them, but you've got to guarantee that you're going to have fresh product year-round.
We'd have
something. If they want to take them, you've got to have fresh product year-round. Isn't the legal counsel?
What's that? I ordered
them. The letter that I received about the
It'd be nice to know that you could go to that mall and catch all you wanted.
For them, it's 70 to 100,000 is what you said.
That's the max. If it's just going to be modeling stuff, and even though I'm working with trawl survey data, and then we're also going to do the
I mean,
wouldn't have done those.
But what if that contract had been two bushels of them?
Oh, yeah, well, have you heard of this? Have you heard this? Have you heard of this crab hatchery stuff? Have you heard about that?
I hear a lot of talk about it.
Well,
and a lot of money is being invested.
Well, I told Kim, I said, when you go to one of your meetings, you're going to ask what volume of large do you think you need to put in the ground and what they can do. I said, now what you're going to do is the sponges on one bushel of crab will produce. I said, you get between 1 and 2 million to the sponge.
Yeah.
There's 100 to 120 crabs in a bushel. I said, do the arithmetic on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I said, if you just kept the Marylanders out of the sanctuary in the spring, that would take care of that problem.
Yeah.
When the crab gets over 2 inches, the predation's not a problem on the crab when it gets over.
A mature male crab, you know, a nice decent quality male crab, is worth $2 to
$2.50. If you start looking at the labor and the expenses,
and that's what happened to the oil. They gave numbers in this book about how they got worked down. They said the only reason that there was any oysters in the bay in the 50s and the 60s was because of two wars. He said because all the men went to war.
Yeah. That's
probably there wasn't anybody
else. Oh. But it's the amount of oysters that were eaten in New York City.
You read that old book, Morris Snow ran a boat for, they catch 3,000 bushels of shrimp.
Yeah.
Sometimes they make 2 trips a day out off the ocean. Yeah. There used to be 1,000 shuckers off the foot of Western Scrabble County between $1,000 and $5,000 shucking oysters. Well, that's what we used to be able to do. And all of a sudden, we got so they keep going down. Now we just, you know, we're glad to have
whatever
in
the
box
you sell.
Right.
Yeah.
But the only thing that I got out of was...
If I turn this off now, the sound will go. We'll just do it at the end.
Well, I mean, this year.
Yeah, you got a lot of water moving through there too, which helps them.
Who is it sells crabs in the sun? Is that Michael? Is he still growing it? He cooks his home crabs over there on Washington. He's over there every day. Is it once a week? Does he just sell females over there or everybody?
Okay. No,
What time of day does he go, over there at 3?
He's there early. He's got his work and everything ready and set up for him.
I've never seen him, but I got to.
Can you go straight back up
and work on church on our.
Yeah,
I had to have to remind their baptismal gift, but it was too early for him.
You follow me if you want. I'll take that from you. I'll do anybody. I'll let a roll. I might do that. Where are you going to eat? She's up here. Yeah, Jenny's moving. You know that. Darren, this wasn't here.
Have you been in there lately?
I haven't been in there since you knew.
We went in there back in September.
What is he able to
say? It was in September, the horses, I think.
Yeah.
Y'all still playing golf?
Nobody wants to, or they all die. They'll get two of them. They three of them. Maybe two more games. All right, let's go, everybody.
Let's start the meeting.
All right, what we got on the next agenda?
Sponge crabs.
Guess who wants to start this? Brown or anybody? Any opening remarks?
Is this going to be primarily about the black sponge discussion, or are you talking about the sponges all together?
Well, the black sponge issues come up about 20 times.
I mean, I think that's the worst law, because it's like, it's the way to...
Yeah, and I think the comments were that it was put forward in 1996. It wasn't part of the reduction plan, the female reduction, but in 1996, the commission met over in Warwick High School, and it was a huge public meeting. You know, maybe 250 or so folks, and that was one of the things that came out at that time as conservation. So the only other thing that I'm aware of, there was a big push. This committee hasn't advocated it, but there was a big push back in 2001 from the Save the Bay Foundation, and had legislative support to have a sponge crab ban. And I was charged with working up different amounts of weeks, from 1 to 3, I think it was, on what would be the savings of the sponge crab ban. And at the bottom, I looked back at this, but at the bottom of the tables, I would note that this savings is strictly a larvae savings, an egg savings, because as soon as they sponge out, those crabs are available for harvest. And it was awkward at the time because it was supposed to be put into a harvest reduction. Well, it's not a harvest reduction. It's an egg savings or a larvae savings. So those are really the issues. And I think even at that time, when we went to the commission, the idea was that the commission was informed that staff thought that there was adequate protection of the sponge crab through the different regulations, And one of the reports that was cited is the dark sponge crab regulation. And that originally, you know, extended a little bit longer into July, and there was a reduction so that now it runs until June 30th on the dark-colored sponge crabs. And I know the charts drive everyone crazy, but essentially half of the stages of sponge crabs are the ones that have to be thrown back. And I don't know whether anyone's actually had a marine police officer come up to them and, you know, check their sponge crabs. You have, you know, so it hasn't been something the committee has liked over time, many different times. So I think that is the, I think that is the issue. And I think it's embedded, last thing I'll say on that, I think it's embedded in the sanctuary issue. In other words, and Ron can talk about the, you know, the health of the female and then of the sponge in June, but I think if there are sanctuary changes, it may be that there's a possibility that it's not a bad idea to keep it through June. But I think that has to play out a little bit.
Just like some of this other stuff, and we've discussed all of it, everything from coloring to whatever. Do you think we're actually seeing a benefit from this? Or is this just a plain old pain in the neck? Because I don't know if Jimmy Dean, if you've been in on any of them, but I talked to Lynn about meetings that they had with law enforcement about this issue, and it drives them nuts too.
Well, I mean, it drives you nuts. Lay down here, and one inspector will tell you one thing, and then you get another one board you a little bit later and tell you something different. You know, everybody sees colors different. You got glasses, you might have contacts, you might be colorblind, you might be, you know what I mean? You're going by a chart. I mean, that's just, I mean, it's hard. Just grab, you start in the morning, you kind of got to go, I mean, and they change colors. I mean,
well, Jamie's gotten one ticket, you know, in 30 years for crabbing, and it was one of those. Mm-hmm. She had a new helper, and it took the patrol officer about an hour to decide what was not right and what wasn't. She said he had to lay it all out all over,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to decide. She only had a couple bushels of crabs at the time of the day on there that were questionable, and he went through them and back through them and through them and back through them and through them. And when she finally got to court, you know, the judge, he didn't dismiss it, but he didn't charge her with anything if she didn't get another ticket within a year or something like that. So it was a huge time thief for what?
And it would also relieve pressure, I know in our areas, on people rushing away to go on them crabs off the river like he was talking about. You know what I mean? That's going to...
Well, I think that was the point at the time, because Jack and I discussed this. And he said, well, he said that's another benefit that crabbers will get off of the sponges, and because it's not worth the hassle. But what's that? What that's done is that's brought a handful more people further on up. So here we are, you know, cost versus benefit again.
Kevin Wade made a comment one time, said, what difference does it make if it's got the eggs on the inside or the outside?
Well, a wife that's 3 months pregnant, do you think of her being more, I mean, you know, is she more valuable than when she's 2 or 3 months pregnant? Pregnant, you know. I mean, every female crab is pregnant for that matter.
Yeah. Well, I think the argument that was made at the time, I guess at Ron Bates, was that they're so close to being able to release the larvae.
I didn't make that argument.
You didn't? Somebody did. They made the point.
But I mean,
that
once they get potted up, I mean, like that, take a 9 month pregnant woman, roll her down a hill, and you see how good that baby comes out. You put her in a pot full 25-30 grabs,
well,
she's getting beat up, she ain't got no legs to rub.
I think you ought to go to the woman's club and say that.
I mean, how's she gonna roll that cushion off? I mean, she's been in that crab line, shook out, dumped in the tub, yanked and pulled on and dumped back overboard. What have you done? You say crab drive you on the way, son?
Yeah,
so I mean, that's the way. She could just throw overboard. To rot and die, feed the turtles.
What are the odds of us being able to convince enough people to just eliminate that? And would it be something that we'd have to come up with a huge mitigation.
Wait a minute. You know, back in, what, 2006?
There's no standard.
2007, we had this discussion. I was here at the meeting.
Right.
And there was, we're going to do away with black sponges if we go with the sanctuary off Virginia Beach. And somehow, in the meeting, it turned around. And you basically just, okay, July 1st, you can keep them. There was never...
Well, what,
I mean, I remember
that was based on, so we, John McConaughey and Ron
right.
were here, and they provided.
So it seems to me like we've already given up something for what we were
and
expecting
there's nothing,
to get.
There's no benefit today, so they can't assign any number to it, and we've changed it. And don't, I mean,
no. So what we did, just to tell you, we.
That's true.
I mean,
is that true
did,
or not?
Yeah. We did a study with Pete Freeman.
Yeah, we've already had this discussion.
On the water temperature and all that.
Yeah, and we found that July and August, early September, that's the right. time when they're really likely to die. Toss them back, and that's why I was there. June, it's a cooler time of year in general, and we didn't see much of a mortality.
Right, and your study also didn't take into account tide, surf, or anything like that either, correct? I mean, you didn't have wave action. You obviously probably didn't have tide either in your...
Nope.
So, I mean, you have to look at those things, too. You just can't say, okay, he's in a little gas jar, and we're going to watch and change the water temperature, and when he drops dead, or she drops dead, it's good to go.
No. What I'm saying is that we didn't see mortality in June. We think it's because of temperature. It was
right.
Cooler.
But what I'm saying is you're not counting, you know, in June, wave action.
Yeah, but
either.
What's the say, dude, or if it was just a week when they were doing the study when he wasn't
catching
a problem?
What I'm saying is,
right.
the bottom line is that this is not working, because if it was, I guarantee we'd have a heck of a lot more crabs around now.
One of the worst things about the regulation is the call requirement. And the call requirement is to try to reduce the mortality. You don't have to call your undersized males as frequently as you have to call these darker sponges out. I don't know if you realize that, but they say they're supposed to be released immediately. So if you dump into your box, you've got to reach right down in the box right then and throw all of those
well,
out.
Well, really, you could get a ticket because when you dump them in the box, you're only allowed a certain amount in the box, too, aren't you?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. You have to take them
box,
and throw them right out.
And
right?
They're all black. You're
ten,
in violation as soon as you're soon. Well, I'm saying,
but
in the box, you're in violation as soon as you dump one pot on board. I mean, that's ridiculous.
That's what they require, Rob. Patrol officers come on there, and if you have black sponges in your call box, you know, of a greater number than supposed to be in a bushel, which the call boxes we use will hold a bushel and a half or two bushels, you know, those plastic tubs, you're in violation. And if you catch a certain amount in one pot and you're going to the next pot and he happens to pull alongside and you haven't called him out yet, you get called, you're going to get a ticket.
Okay, so let me tell you the science part of this, our field. We were never behind that 2 week or whatever, what's about a week for the brown and black. So I'm not even really sure what the origin of that was. Our stance on it is that once a female matures and hardens and is on her way to releasing the eggs, that she's not going to suffer very much natural mortality. So to me, a female that has already been mated and is really, she's going to have very little mortality as opposed to the female that's bearing the sponge, right? So to me, she's just about as valuable ecologically as the one that has the sponge. So there's not a science that says that there's a huge mortality that occurs between orange and black, and therefore, if you protect the black, then you're really much better off. No, there's not. That's totally...
And once they've been potted, that adds a whole other thing to the equation, too. I mean, you go in the box, you pull their legs off. I mean, a lot goes... I mean, it's not like they're just... chicken neck and one black silk out of the water and she's got all her legs on, she's all beautiful and you take her and drop her on the other side of the dock and she goes on about her business. You know, if it was
well,
like
I,
that.
I understand. I was talking to Billy.
Yeah.
You know Billy. He's calling the crabs and on my boat. And this is how idiotic we think. And I'm kind of funny about calling the crabs because I don't want all the legs off of them. You know, I retail everything we catch. And he's up there with a Jimmy crab doing that. And everybody that does much of this knows that if you release your grip on a little bit, they'll release whatever they're hanging on to. I said, Billy, don't shake the crabs, you know. So he quits doing it. And then I pick up the next pot, and I'm going like this, you know. I'm going, Billy, don't shake the crabs.
Right.
You know, the first thing you got to do is shake the hell out of them to get them out of there. So once you've done that to them, you know.
Yeah. Go ahead. You got a question.
Yeah, I have a question for Marcy because I know he's been down for part of the day a long time. And I was expecting he doesn't. How big an area is it that they both catch the so sponge crabs, black ones and the others?
How big an area up down the shore?
Yeah.
From two foot of water to 10. They all come ashore.
All come ashore.
Yeah, the sponge crabs bust in deep water and they come ashore.
It's all over the lower bay now. It gets everywhere.
Yep.
I mean, where we're at, you'll catch them right up in the creeks and rivers a long way.
You catch all our sponge crabs in salt water.
You'll go from where we start.
Well, I'm mad, if you don't mind. I like to have a discussion with you. You say when they come ashore in shallow water, mm-hmm. and they do that, you know, for what, 2-3 weeks period of time?
Yes. Yep.
When the next, and do most of them pot in that area real heavy at that time?
You can walk on pot to pot June, July, and August.
It looks like a very sensible thing to do.
It's not a 2-3 week. I mean, it's from about May 15th, June, all the way through.
Well, I mean, it's got to be a peak time. Peak time and everything.
July.
Yeah, the last part of June or early part of July.
Yeah. Most days, they one week in June to 3 weeks in July.
Yep.
Wouldn't it make better sense if you could crab in another area, move away from that area, and let them crab go? That way you wouldn't be bothered, you wouldn't be disturbed.
That's
and you couldn't, that, you couldn't back on them, you don't get that much warm, do you?
$50 to $60 a basket. I do real good on them. I mean, mm-hmm. really, we do. I mean, and it's 10 foot of water. I know, I'm not saying that's not, but we're at Craney Island. Crabbing a lot more than 10 foot of water over there. You know what? We crab, we catch not just that we get them. I mean, you go down to Buck Run with the towers, 18, 19 foot of water, 20 foot. I mean, we catch them anywhere you go down here from about the 1st of June into May, right before Memorial Day, right on through. You're going to get busted sooks until you get up above Pagan River somewhere or until you get way up some creek. Or, I mean, what do you see, Cody? How far do you got to run to get away from cushions when you crab on the lower end of the bay?
They're up the coast.
That's what,
bay shore,
that's what I'm saying. You're not forever. You've got to run from them, and you can't run out in the bay. You know, up here, you can't. It's not. It goes. It happens. You're in violation from the first day of June. Right on.
They're all mixed in. You know, you'll get. They'll go through a cycle. You'll start getting all orange sponges, and then within a week's time, you're getting mostly black sponges. And then in 2 days, it'll change. They'll clean up again, and then you'll have orange sponges, and then you have black sponges. But in between, you have 3 or 4 in a pot everywhere you go all the time, but it won't be the majority of them.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
But there's enough of them everywhere you can't move away from them.
I mean, you can't tell. Last year, I've seen years on Memorial Day, every one of them be black. Last year on Memorial Day, they were still clean. You know, you can't.
It's water temperature.
I mean, you can't. Yeah, exactly. Down here, you don't know. You can't tell when they're going to be.
Well,
the other
I've heard from the other crab with the crab down here on. They said that they did it for several years, and it got to them. They just couldn't stand seeing that many. And at that time, they wouldn't get such great price. I mean, they'd get $8-$10 a bushel. That they really wouldn't. They
got tired of coming to Tugboat Alley and going back up the bay, losing 150, 200 crab pots. That's what really happened.
The thought of just going that many one crab, egg-bearing crab, that was going to produce, was immoral, and they just didn't want to do it no more.
It was immoral. They said, we'll go kill the children.
What's the difference in catching in the spring with a pregnant or catching her with a cushion when she's pregnant?
They're gonna go catch the children and go get up the river and go get the children. That's a matter morally to go kill the children and the babies than it is to catch. That makes perfect sense. That makes good sense. That's why we're where we're at now.
It's all vicious cycle.
What do you think we would
look at percentage? That's what you go by. That's what all these big staff people were going to go by percentage. Was it 6%, 40%,
or 50%?
We've had this thing so long now. You indicated that you thought that there would have to be a mitigation. more than for us to get rid of it?
Well, we're not going to solve this right now. I think what has to happen is the committee needs to lay out the benefits. Ron is going to have to indicate the the biological aspects. You know, that June is different than July, water temperature-wise, survival of sponges and female crabs, because the deal about July, especially later in July, was that the female crabs also suffered a lot of mortality, if I remember the study. And
there's no difference to the whether she carried it.
And then you have the problem that Ken mentioned in the pots, what I'll call agonistic kind of behavior, that kind of stuff. So you have to have the benefits, you have to list the benefits, the committee has to be fairly solid for us to bring the benefits back. You are going to run into some, resistance, I would think, by the commission, because they're at least tuned in enough now that they understand that there's been low abundance. And although, to answer your question before, I don't think anyone can show any proof that the sponge crab situation has
If there was any
helped
proof,
out.
I wouldn't be for doing away with it. I just don't see any benefit.
Well, I mean, you're going
to create. So now we're back to what happened in 2007 when the Regulatory Review Committee met, which Ron was part of that, as were other biologists and ecologists up and down the coast. And if you look at that report, what they said about our regulations were it's difficult to pinpoint any regulation in terms of conservation benefits, but when you take them as a whole, it probably forestalled an even further decline. So that's the kind of thing that, the commission would understand. But, I don't think staff here is, opposed to bringing something forward. It's just that next time, it has to be what we've heard a few times tonight, cost-benefit. You've got to list the benefits, and perhaps even one of the benefits is the identification that you cited.
Well,
is the fact that law enforcement probably does not enjoy having to enforce this particular law, but they will.
This is purely rumor. Was it last year or the year before, I think, where there was a huge quantity of these crabs over at the Marshalls area, and law enforcement just threw their hands up, pretty much ignored it, and everybody over there was just catching them.
I mean, I didn't hear that, but
is that a true story? Or?
It's going to mitigate itself a little bit because you're going to relieve pressure off of others. You're going to have to run there on the first time. Sure. You're going to, because every crab is going to be a catching crab. So your turn, you're still going to save.
The other year,
we had a good winter, March 27th.
Anyway, Mr. Chairman, that's my idea is that, next round, let's talk about the benefits and the positives and, if there are negatives in terms of, again, the perception, I think, by a lot of folks is that you're that close to the spawn. That debate went on, again, with Rahm and John McConaughey and the commission back in 2007, and it wasn't a quick debate either. It was one that was, they really had some lengthy discussion about it on the commission.
That's a funny thing. John McConaughey told me that he didn't think catching crabs in the sanctuary in the spring hurt a thing, even though you were saving them in the fall. I went over to his office in Old Dominion. I had that discussion. He said, "Oh no, you're wasting your time doing it."
There's two more things to consider about the sponge crab. One, female sponge crab, she's meaner than hell. So we ain't real gentle when we're trying to cull them. You can't keep them, so you ain't gentle with them when you get rid of them. And the second thing, July, when it's 80, 90, 100 degrees, I've seen them orange, put them in a basket, and black 3 hours later. When things die, they turn color, just like you. If you die and lay out in the sun for 4 hours and 90 degrees, you ain't going to be white no more. And I've seen that happen, too. You remember when Jack White was on the commission, I carried him one time with me and showed him that. We put crabs in 3 or 4 baskets and set them aside and told him and him right there watching me. When we got to the dock, we called him again, and just about every basket was against the law then. But when we put them in the basket, they weren't. They changed color in the heat. I've seen crabs, I'm sure everybody else has, too. You put a lid on it in the sun when you get to the dock. The ones with the crack of the lid, that looks like they've been steamed. They're red. Yeah, and it busts itself. Yeah, you're turning the color on yourself. I'm not real sure that it's the right thing, getting rid of dark sponge crabs. The tickets are the main thing. Like I say, you catch something 6 o'clock in the morning, and at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it's illegal. That's wrong. It's legal at 6, but illegal at 2. That's wrong.
It's that color chart is too subjective. You know, it just is. It would be different. I'm not pushing for this. If you said one had a sponge and one didn't,
well, I mean,
but when you start getting into those colors, you know, it's subjective.
You can even tell something. If it's 3-inch oyster, you know, if it's under 3 inches, it ain't legal. If it's a 4.5-inch Jimmy, it ain't legal. You know that's cut and dry. But it's, I mean.
We're just trying to build an argument.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just saying, it's hard, and then you got to ride around looking over your shoulder, hoping you don't get, I mean, that's just...
Roman, from the time she busts out to the time she rubs off the first time, how long does that take?
Did you hear that?
About 2 weeks.
Take 2 weeks from the time she busts out till she rubs off the first time.
Yeah, it's going to depend on temperature, but roughly right around 2 weeks.
Right.
That was about a week orange. Switching yellow and then brown and black, something like that.
I mean, it just seems like we're just sitting here arguing about what color it is. I mean, you know, what kind of time frame it takes for her to rub off. I mean, actually, you know, she's not getting a chance. Not saying to close one fishery down, keep the other one open. I mean, what's got to be fair for one's got to be fair for all. And like Rob said, you know, we got to keep the economic value in this to a certain degree.
Biological factors. Do you guys know why it changes from orange to black?
Yeah.
I know you do, Ken.
I'm assuming the yolk and the larvae's getting larger.
They're eating the yolk, and that's their eye spots.
That's right.
The black eye spots as they get big.
And then from the time she rubs off that one and then re-cushions, how long does that take?
I think about a month or so, again, depending on temperature.
But what's to say when we throw her back overboard in that same area, they're usually pretty hungry. Okay, if she doesn't get too beat up or nothing else, when we throw her overboard, if she's in the beginning of the being illegal phase, what's to say she ain't go pop right back? And you know what I mean? What's to say that same crab's not go pop right back in the pot and didn't have to go back all back through the whole catch and release, you know?
Well, I'm just talking around the same thing. I mean, you know, you're going off the
time.
I mean,
they do that.
I'm just saying,
we're always okay.
Nobody wants a closure. Nobody wants anything. Everybody here always wants to stay fishing 7 days a week. Nobody wants to give up anything or 6, you know, whatever. But, I mean, would it be beneficial, I mean, if you shut it down for a week? I know it's a lot of hassle, a lot of time. What benefits, pros and cons, could you get out of it?
But I mean, down here like me,
we're talking about a sponge crab. Nobody wants to give up anything. So you can say,
we went through this way back. And
so what do you get? Close the thing down for a week, but leave the black sponges before and after that?
Before and after. I mean, we'll give something a chance to rub off. What would it benefit? I mean, will we get any more larvae out? But on the same token, we're sitting there talking, isn't that what the sanctuary is for? So,
you
know.
Down a week, who's going to take the pots up? Well, that's
what I'm getting at. You know, but if we can sit here and talk about a color, or we can just keep right on, like I say, it doesn't matter whether she's eggs inside, eggs outside. Plain and simple.
Still pregnant.
So if we're going to try to save something, it doesn't matter whether it's black, orange, or clean. you know, what benefit would it have if there was some relief time, not for one, but for all? I mean, you know, because you can sit here and talk about this all day long and all into the night.
Well, this is something that Mark and I were talking about that lower sanctuary, at, you know, the old Encode sanctuary, keeping it closed. And if you did something like that, could you get rid of the other sanctuaries, get rid of this black sponge law, and benefit more from once those crabs migrate all the way down the bay and they're right there at the mouth of the bay, go ahead and let them do their business, all of them.
Close it out 1 week earlier, that only that portion of it, not the whole sanctuary.
Why don't we let it run till June 1st
just,
and then shut it down
just,
for the rest
just,
of the year?
Just like that. No, then we're
well, no, you're just, talking savings then.
But then at the end of the year, if you can't go back down there, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, that's just.
Well, they'll be there in the spring. See, this is.
But you're not going back in the spring either if you're going to close it in the fall and then go back in the spring?
You got to give and take, evidently.
We were cut off from
the I'm really looking for something that, like you were talking about, something that'll really give us a benefit. I don't know if it will or not, but it sure be interested to discuss.
I bet you would see the numbers in the Lafayette River go down. I bet you that. I bet all them boys around there. I bet you would see the amount, just in that one river. I know the where these people have a choice of fishing. I know where they have a choice. You know, unless they're going to pack up and go somewhere way far away, and you would see the numbers because that's where they have no choice but to go. Where they leave Ocean View and Willoughby, where do they come?
Yeah, they go
right up to where he's at. And that's where they're piling up there. They have to because they're not going to deal with the, you know, and that's, I mean, it was going to mitigate. It's going to help the crab fishery overall because it's not going to be this mad rush up the river to go get them crabs as soon as they drop off the dealers and as soon as they get done shedding.
So where do we stand on this?
Well, just you know, if I can say it, the idea of that's been proposed before by the committee maybe is somewhere in between, which was after July 4th or so, there is a slowdown economically, and maybe that's a time when bushel limits could be even lower, and. You know, maybe that's somewhere in between what Jimmy Dean said and what some of the others said, and it happens to coincide with the getting pretty close to the peak of the, you know, sponge crab. You know, if you think the peak is July 15th, August 15th. So that's another thing to consider. But I think what has to happen here is you really do need to go through this like you are now. And then next time around, I mean, we'll have notes from tonight, but next time around, I mean, if you want to plan something, then we need to be sitting here doing a planning phase completely.
Well, the bushel limits was another hit on busted hooks in itself when y'all put them in, because all you got to do is go back and look at your numbers historically. Those guys were catching more pounds and stuff, and obviously now they're filling less bushels, so that was more of a hit on them. Versus the guys up the river that probably weren't catching, but close to that amount anyway. We already put, with that in itself, we already put another law on the busted hooks right there.
We've got a delicate balance in that we still are paying attention to the abundance. And I know a few of you haven't been on the committee a long time, but we still pay attention to the abundance that comes out of the winter dredge survey. And that's why we have a regulation now that goes through July 4th of 2015. We've already heard from some that they're not too happy because of the fact that beyond the crab pot, which is about 94% of the total harvest, the smaller gears are now closed down in the fall, as you know, and won't reopen until May 1. So that is something that responded directly to the poor abundance of the female crabs greater than 2.4 inches. So that's another thing that, you know, we have to factor in when we go to the commission. And that's another reason why when you talk about cuts and reductions, it's always going to be relative to where the abundance stands. We can't get away from that. Joe and others, Rom on CBSAC, which is a scientific advisory committee for the bay as a whole, are trying to figure out other data sources that can corroborate and supplement what we have from the winter dredge survey, which, despite what we saw in 2012 with 583 million juveniles that didn't pan out, we still have had a fairly good record with the winter dredge survey. But that is part of this as well.
Ron, I forgot what you called it, but your think tank or whatever it is for the bay and the blue crab, how many different agencies are involved in that? Just let everybody.
Joe's the chair, so he should tell you.
No, you're talking about the GIT is what you're asking about, Ken.
I guess. I mean, you've got Chesapeake Bay Foundation, you got NOAA, you've got...
Okay, that's GIT. Yeah. Yeah, the GIT has Maryland DNR, VMRC, District of Columbia, PRSC, Chesapeake Bay Foundation, NOAA, and it even has positions for DEQ, which we haven't seen them, and other agencies.
But, I mean, that's the thing that nobody really knows. I mean, we think it is just Maryland, Virginia, and the Potomac River, but it's not.
Right. Yeah, right now we're undergoing a blue crab management strategy, which is geared towards this allocation that I mentioned, the evaluation. And, you know, so that's ongoing. And I think other concerns, like non-governmental concerns, they have input, but frankly, when it comes to allocation, it's going to be the jurisdictions that have, you know, the ideas of how it really should go forward. And that's just one issue. You get involved with oysters.
But that input also is politics, that input, and that's got a whole lot to do with everything.
Well, you have a watershed agreement, and that's what says by 2018 we have to be where we are. But, you know, back to this particular situation on the sponge crabs, you have some good ideas. Next time we need to come up with your plan, you know, staff will take down what your plan is. You can wrangle through it again. I think I told you the negative parts of proposing to do away with it. Now, when you say do away with the sponge crab, you realize it goes at the start of the season when there are no sponges in March, or very, very, very few, all the way through June 30th. So there's still that May issue. You still do have sponges in May. And, you know, so you can look at something in June as a recommendation. You can look at all of June. You know, it's open that way. But you probably realize that, you know, the commission is probably going to have some reservations, but that shouldn't stand in the way of coming up with a plan.
Is that what you were talking about, Jimmy Dean? No sponges or no female harvest?
No any harvest.
Well, if they're all pregnant, I mean, you know, like Marshall was saying, every area is different. I mean, if we're going to do something, you can't discriminate against one. Okay, you can keep these, you can't, or you can't fish from this. You know, everybody wants to keep fishing. But the only fair way to do this is, if there's going to be a certain time block, in which, hey, you know, the dredgers took the biggest cut of all. But if there's going to be a certain time block, there'd be no gear in the water. I don't care if it's up a ditch. Plain and simple. Because we can all sit here and talk in this room, well, that don't benefit me, or this don't do this for me, or we're doing this. But if it's going to be fair, it's going to be fair.
It was, see, with me, I crabbed 121 days, and I've never caught a sponge crab.
Well, that's what I'm getting at as far as being fair.
I've never seen one.
Ken, that's all they do is, you know, May, June, July.
But then you've got a dominoes effect. You take all the watermen out of the business. You've got crab houses who have Mexicans that they have to pay.
Well,
regardless, you know,
the city,
and then you're moving to the city. I mean, you're just boom, 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 boom. You're destroying a whole lot of business.
Well,
problem.
Wait a minute. Hold on here. In 08, it was shut down. The whole winter industry was shut down. I'm not getting involved in what goes on as far as what's shut down. We're talking 1 week. I was shut down for a whole 4 months. You know, and a lot of picking houses and people depending on that too.
Yeah, and
we're talking 1 week. What would it be beneficial? That was all I had. Mm-hmm.
Shut down for profit.
Yeah, well, the retail aspects of that wouldn't be good because we get I mean, you know, I'm not saying no. I'm just giving you another part of the prism to look at. And it's not, it, you know, it's a whole lot of places. Like, you know, I don't have any garage in which there are down there where I am. But, you know, you would hurt all of them, too.
Well, I just don't want...
We only get a few weeks a year when Labor Day comes around, retail-wise, people quit thinking about crabs. And that's actually when they're the best. And they quit.
The truck market's good.
You know?
All right. Well, I...
So, you know, if I lose a week in the middle of the summer and everybody else that does like I do as far as retail goes, you know, that's a big hit. I'm not saying I wouldn't take it.
No.
I'm just telling you to think about that.
Oh, sure, I have thought about it. But I'm just saying, and the reason why I thought about this, because it was to be fair for one, to be fair for all. It can't be discriminated because you work on the lower part of the bay or work on the upper part of the bay. You know,
when we had a lot of resource, nobody even worried about sponge bait.
Exactly.
No, I was getting ready to say that. You were talking about quality and stuff. If we had enough good quality crabs to catch, we probably wouldn't be worried about them.
Many years ago, July 4th, I was done. I couldn't sell no more bushels, so I was done. I had to go fishing across the river. You can sell some of them. But that's what we're here for. Just like what he said, he made a suggestion. Nobody had to get mad at him.
Yeah. That's what we're here for.
I'm not saying I wouldn't do it. If I thought there'd be some benefit from it.
What kind of benefit would bitch and complain about it? That's what we're here for, to come up with an idea.
Yeah,
come
since
up
Marshall
with
said that, let me speak back to industry.
Well, hold on, Ken. I just want to ask Ron, what would he thought? I just asked that, what would he thought the benefits would be from it, to let 1 week rub off?
I'd have to give it some thought on that, because it depends where it is, you know, where they are. If they're outside the sanctuary. Yeah, I'd have to go look at the, you know, migration data and various other things as far as whether or not they're going to get caught somewhere else.
Right.
So, whether it links up with the brown-black regulation.
But, I mean, what about if we got to do the dredge survey this year? It's a good amount of crabs, which it really should be. And we've already done it. We've already got tons of regulations in place. It would, like, if you just did away, it's still not going to make that much difference, because next year it'll probably be more crabs than you can shake a stick at. So why are we going to start already taking
the crabs? Well, the problem is, if for some reason other than that, the following year you have a decline, everybody's going to want to blame it on that. It doesn't know any better. And then you're right back to where you started from, and maybe even worse. Oh, well, they caught all those damn sponge crabs.
Well, they also got their fill when everybody thought the crabs were dredging and made crabs come back. So they shut down the whole industry,
well,
and I didn't make nothing.
The folks down where I live, Billy Reed, who works with me, and where Mark ties up, all these people from the north end of Virginia Beach and all around Lynn Haven go in this one restaurant at one time or another during the week, a lot of it. And the two discussions they have there continually about what they hate the most is crab dredging and the menhaden boats. And the other one is sponge crab.
Yep.
And these are people that don't work on the water. They're just sitting in the restaurant talking, and they know some people around there work on the water.
The only thing worse than being on a crab boat is being a menhaden fisherman, because everybody that comes down, every club chunker that comes down to my building, you'd think that they'll tell you they ain't no menhaden. You're exactly right.
Right.
I do know that.
So that's the reality of what blowback you might have if some of this got in the news, which it will, and then the following year you have some change, not for the better, that's going to get blamed. And the politics are going to get reflected in that mirror up there.
I have a question. I thought that the crab sanctuaries were for the sponge crabs protection. I thought that was...
It's for a combination of sponge crabs and the females that are, like, in
right.
the part
so,
of the
right. So, I mean, that's not enough. Just change this. I mean, instead of...
And we added the whole ocean.
That was...
And the
I mean, it looks like those, like, A and B, or whether those two things should be together. I mean, because we talked about sanctuaries, and then we stopped that, and now we're talking about sponge crab regulations. I mean, I thought...
Yeah,
sponge crabs
together.
Were part of the sanctuary. So
that's why I'm saying, if you can come...
forward.
So we just kind of shifted the sanctuary around or something, what you're suggesting.
We added
the
sanctuary.
Did over 100?
Yeah, we
look
added
at the size, look at the size of this
sanctuary.
That's what I'm saying.
Look at the size of it. That's not it. Anybody pay no attention to this?
Well,
let me show you.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't see why we need to regulate more sponge crabs. That's what I'm saying. That's plenty of
them. Virginia Brown Melange. Virginia Brown Melange.
Just do away with it.
Look at that.
That's why I'm confused why we would have two separate conversations.
Rob, how
many
square miles is that?
These are two topics that belong together.
Rob, how many square miles is the sanctuary?
With all 865 square miles in the bay.
865 square miles.
93 square miles. But I wanted to respond, if I could. Earlier on, I did say that. In fact, with the sponge crab discussion, it really can depend on how the sanctuary situation goes. They are linked, and I don't think they're mutually exclusive, but they still had to be talked about separately because the main idea about the sanctuary that we've heard in the past is that it impacts northern segment differently than the southern segment because of the timing of the season. So that's the biggest situation we've had. We have also heard that perhaps that lower sanctuary, which for years had been closed June 1 to September 15th and is now May 16th, that should have an even longer closure and there should be trade-offs with the rest of the sanctuary.
The system has detected that a minimum number of lines are connected to this conference.
And then the sponge crab issue has been for several years about the timing of when it's in place because it's already been reduced by 15 days about 7 years ago. It used to go to July 15th. But it's possible that if the sanctuary changes its shape or areas are not, you know, you heard Ram say he's not married to the entire sanctuary as it is,
mm-hmm.
That it could impact what you say on sponge crab. So
but
we haven't got there.
Like 75% of the crabs are that seems like a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we're only messing with 25%
of 75% of the crabs during the spawning season. And so those same crabs that are in there spawning, they're going to get caught. They only about 6 to 8% of those crabs survive another year. So most of them are caught.
So you're saying we can shrink the sanctuary, make it like a year round, right?
I'm saying that's one of the things.
Shrink the sanctuary and then cut the black cushion, mm-hmm. then do away with that. That would simplify.
Well, I think there would be, we'd have to look at how big
it is.
But yeah, that's what
I don't crab up here, but I got a friend of Doug's, and he's from Tangier.
Yeah.
That sanctuary just totally screws them guys with that. Because we catch crabs here. They ain't never got to them yet. And if you know anything about crab and school crabs, when they run. They'll be simple one day, 3 days later, they pass wood trap. So he told me by the time they get to them, before he catches school crabs in the spring, you know, that's what we call, his sanctuary is over. He can't even catch them. You see what I'm saying?
That's been the complaint.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to shrinking the sanctuary. That gives them a fair advantage, right? And keep it, year round where it don't totally screw everybody.
Well, the whole reason the sanctuary was really developed the way it is to be fair across the whole bay.
Yeah,
but the whole.
But really, if you go by bay temperature, it ain't fair. It's colder up north than it is down south. So
if you just go by salinity levels, you can't do that because they're trying to get to high salinity.
No, I got a question.
Yeah, we're totally open to looking if you want to,
narrow it up.
I mean, the thing that I've heard around is if you can have some part of that, the historical one, closed year round, then we can actually figure out what savings that is. And then you can say, okay, well, that's enough savings to remove the sponge trap.
Well, what if we just close the, not the big sanctuary, what's the other one that they just made into
that same type of logic about the edge fishery and the kind that you catch them in the spring?
They used to go from that temple shoals.
Yeah, historical, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, what if you just close it a couple of weeks earlier? Wouldn't that give, I mean, in the spring?
Why would you want to do that?
And you get less money down.
Ron,
if you're going to catch one crab for us a year, just close it a couple weeks earlier.
See, that gets complicated because you're going to catch those crabs in either the spring or in the fall. That's the problem we've had. Is that so the females from Maryland are coming down in the fall. Females in Virginia are usually coming down during the feeler runs, right? Right after that, they're moving down there. So you're getting different batches of crabs coming down at different times of the year. And so the females coming down from Maryland in the fall, they haven't spawned yet. So they need to be protected to spawn. They'd have to be protected the following spring. And then, of course, in the summer when they're spawned.
Do you know the greatest amount of crabs in the lower sanctuary? When are they there? What is the greatest amount?
The largest number of crabs? Well, from what we looked at some time ago, it's really the sponge crabs that's going to be it starts in, as you know, June, sometimes May when it's warm and so on. And it's through June, July, August, into about mid-September.
And then they just go wherever, right?
Well, what they do after they get done spawning, then they'll go to the shallows and,
Rob? I didn't quite understand what you said about. Did you say that 75% of the females are protected?
We estimated that during the spawning season, the sanctuary protects about 75%.
I got that part.
Yeah.
The other part, what was the 6% that you said?
What I said is that of the females that have been protected in the sanctuary,
75%.
It's really all females. Only about 6 to 8% are going to survive over the year to spawn again.
Because they're going to get caught
by all the different fisheries.
So we got this great
big that was while the dredge fishery was in place. I'll say
94% of the crabs are getting caught every year.
Or die from natural mortality.
But
about 90 of the mature. That's of the mature. No, mature females. 90 to only about 90 to 92% or so don't make it to spawn again a second year.
So
mature females. I'm not talking about other crabs.
So do you have any idea? You say that 75% of the females, the sanctuary says, but only 6% of them survive for another year. Is that correct?
It's about 6 to 8 percent, something like that.
You ever figured out what survives if the sanctuary wasn't closed, if it was open? You ever figured out what we did the following year?
What we did is, we did it a little bit differently. What we found is that the females that are in the sanctuary are 8 times more likely to survive than females outside of the sanctuary. So you take a mature female inside and a mature female outside. The mature female inside the sanctuary has 8 times the probability that she's going to survive through the spawning season. So,
but at the end, it's still only 6%.
No, that's
you got me. I'm confused here.
Okay, it's different things.
Okay.
If you take a female that is in the sanctuary, right, during the spawning season, she has 8 times the likelihood of surviving during that spawning season. Female outside. Yeah. So if you then take, if you take a female that's been caught in a dredge survey, all right, let's just say that. That's the way we take. Then only about 8% of those mature females now will survive to spawn again a second year. They only make it through that year, only about 8% of them survive.
How long would a crab live in a tank under optimum conditions? What's a crab's lifespan?
We're thinking here it's probably about somewhere about 6 years. We've gotten, from our tag returns, we've gotten 6-year-old crabs back. I think maybe 1 or 2 7, but that's it. So most of them, about 5-6 years.
Now, with the fishery, most of them only live 1 year.
Most of them only live between 1 and 2.5 years.
I've always heard, I thought she only cycled 3 times.
That's in 1 year. She can produce 3 in the Chesapeake, we think, and we're going to test this, but in the Chesapeake, we think she can produce 2 to 3 spawns in a year, and then she can do it again the following year. Crabs in North Carolina can do 5 in a year. Crabs, they've held crabs in Florida and had them produce 8 in 1 year and up to something like 15, I think it was, over a lifetime.
Now, why is that? Water temperature?
Water temperature. Yeah, water
temperature.
That's why we think it's only about 3 in.
So then global warming should be good for us, right?
I wonder if
that's one reason for blue crab. Yeah, it should be. It's really good for New York.
I'll just grab it for Christmas.
That's why you see
the fishery. Yeah, get Al Gore.
They used to know. Now they have.
It's just hot.
Carolina having any of this rainfall as we are?
They have. They had a major decline either shortly after we did.
But I'm talking to a guy that was your brother. He was from Carolina coming to get supplies.
Yeah.
He said him and his brother fish 1,000 pots. They have no catch limit, no pot limit. 1,000 pots.
Well, my question would be how many crabbers he got.
Exactly.
It's him and his brother. They fish
500. How many crabbers?
Oh, I don't know. Crabbers. I'm just talking about
compared to us.
They got two brothers.
But,
they fish 500 every other day.
Yeah, it's a different stock. They get affected by different things. They get affected much more, for instance, by hurricanes than we do.
Now, like the scallop, and I understand that's federal. Everybody's on the same way. But like, if Virginia always follows Maryland, always have, I guess they always will.
Yeah.
None of that.
It's the same stuff. Yeah.
All right. Why wouldn't your neighbors take Carolina fall right into that?
It's because of the circulation, really the ocean currents, because the ocean currents are such that Chesapeake gets most of their larvae from its own stock. They get a few from Delaware, but the North Carolina ones generally don't come back up.
So
they,
we don't get no Carolina crabs.
If anything, some of our crabs make it down there.
Our crabs go to Carolina.
Yeah.
Didn't try to drudge down the Cavalier and all that.
And in the same way, Delaware, for instance, has very different patterns because they're much more affected by temperature. They had a huge decline in 1977, I think it was, because they had one of the worst winters on record, coldest winters on record.
Well, I think last year we had something happened last winter, because I'm going to tell you, starting off in one of the crabs, but as the year come, I caught more crabs on average the whole summer.
Right on. Better and better.
I mean, I think we had something going on there. Really, we didn't have crabs in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
We had a cold winter last winter, and I think,
I can't prove
that we had winter kill, but that's what it looked like. Because as the year come on, our crab are coasting, all down lower part of the bay, a little bit everywhere.
They did have a high mortality. We don't get winter mortality very much. In Virginia, what happens is they get up to 30% winter mortality in Maryland. So those crabs.
Maryland increased their female protection up there, so they have more to make it through.
Well, they did it 1 year. They closed crabbing in November, and all the Virginia crabbers were waiting for those crabs as they came.
Well, that's just the way it is. They're not going
to
die.
They do the same thing to us in the spring.
They do the same thing in the spring. They're not, least if they come down here, if we miss them, at least they're going
to
live.
Well, what do you think happened to the crabs that we had here last fall?
Well, we didn't have
many last fall, but I'm saying I've seen more crabs as June right on through than I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, we still had a pretty, last year we still had a pretty good spawning cycle. We saw a lot of juveniles this fall, and actually we're starting to see a lot of females too.
What happens if the grass comes in and you're going to go do your survey and you ain't ever going to get to them? You know what I mean? All that grass and stuff. I mean, if that comes in, what the chances of you might not get to see the crabs that are there?
What grass?
Hydroid. Maybe if you drudge, since that hits the bottom, if you're drudging, they'll get through that.
They actually look through all of that.
Yeah, but I can make one on that one, and I think Danielle and Mike will say that. We did one set. I made one site up the bay. I said, we're going to make a site here. You said there wasn't no crabs there. I said, yes, it is. I made the same, laid 37 licks in the same spot. Am I right, Mike?
You are right.
And how many bushels did I get out of that? 50 some bushels?
A lot.
How many did you catch?
In the same spot.
How many did you catch your first toe through there?
I seen about 12, 15 on the teeth.
How many did you catch your last toe through there?
First look, I had, what, half a basket, half, two-thirds, then finally two levels, two piled-up baskets.
Well, you got better after it got worse because you got racked.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you get a cold water, because I know for a fact, I was amazed on how much grass when we did that survey. And I said it from the first day to the last day. We never had that grass in the bay like we did.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you.
It was more hydroids than I've ever seen from
Yalt
River Channel, from down the bay, Yalt River Channel, all the way up. More grass than I've seen in my life. And I've been dredging for almost 25 years.
And a few spots it may have...
You know, it used to be dredging anywhere from the 92nd Island up to the tail of Horseshoe there. You know how that was always dredged? It'd be the same thing. You towed through there, and you caught anything, and then turn around. And then after you got four or five boats on, you get a lot of
them. But that means you're going to run into
more places. All right, Jen, so start planning for the next
meeting.
Can we go back to the sanctuary? If you look off Virginia Beach, y'all, you would notice that, or even the lower bay, anywhere around Virginia Beach area, all the way down to the North Carolina lines, we were not allowed to crab on the 30-foot contour. And I'd like to see a 30-foot contour opened up at Cape Henry all the way around to the Virginia Carolina line to alleviate some pressure out of Glen Haven.
Would you be able to put forward if this committee agrees that they want to suggest it, then we would look at it.
Because you made a comment recently about you went up Glen Haven and noticed all the buoys up there. And now I crab there, and we all crab our maximum limit, and you can't catch anything there in the summertime. And if we, several of us, we had the option to go down there again like we did years ago, we would move out of there and go down there. It would only be two or three crabbers.
Yeah.
That's the maximum limit. You have that. We all did it. We just want to be able to go somewhere where we can actually catch a few crabs.
Yeah. How's the sponge thing going to affect it?
We don't care. We'll go anyway. It's better than sitting at the dock not catching anything.
We'd be happy with it.
I see everywhere else in the bay. Sure. Everywhere else. You can crab along the shoreline. You can't do it off Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
We're talking equality and fairness.
That's right.
Like I said, it'd only be two or three crabs.
All right, that's something to look at next time. All right, we need to plan for the next work session.
Are we going to continue these work sessions like this?
That's been brought up several times.
We're going to do it this way or that way.
We're going to have to sit down and get a little more detail next time around on those proposals, on Mark's proposals, on the sponge crab. I heard something tonight which really hits home with me, which is as you go forward with this, as we take it to the commission, you have to think of good times and the bad times. So the measures that you're promoting that aren't necessary, you have to make sure that they're ones that the commission or anyone else wouldn't say, well, wait a minute, what happens if the abundance is down? Is what you're advocating, going to hamper the stock? I think that's what it all comes down to. I say that because we're not going to talk about it tonight, but we did have a proposal for a limited winter dredge fishery, and the commission easily fell in step that the abundance was low, and because of that, it was a non-starter. So that tells me that if you want to make changes, which is fine, we'll be happy to carry changes forward. The situation, though, is make sure that there are changes that can't be looked at by the commission as having a negative effect on the stock. So if someone said trade-offs before, someone said mitigation, those are the kind of things we'd have to talk about with all these.
Well, what if you just
What if you just tried, like, after, how long is it before we know what he's going to have for this year, our new stock assessment, or our new count?
Well, we're sort of independent right now of the dredge fishery. The little situation we're in is we're all moving in the bay towards probably an August 1 to July 31st time frame. This particular two calendar years, it's July to July. What that means is we'll have two winter dredge survey results to guide us, because there'll be overlap with the way the management framework is going to be. It's not going to be tied to April anymore. It's going to be tied to August 1. So that means you'll have the previous April or early May winter dredge survey results, and then turn the corner and go forward, and you'll have the next winter dredge survey results. So the whole idea of that is the commission wanted to give some conservation to juveniles as well as the adult, as well as the mature females, and even the females that aren't mature yet, what are called the 1+. And so to do that, if you think about what was said earlier tonight by Doug, a lot of the juveniles that are picked up by the winter dredge survey are going to be mature, most of them, by the following fall. And so that was sort of what was called in the press a two-pronged approach, and the commissioner and the commission advocated that. So I think it's a benefit overall. So I think we're a little independent from, you know, the timing of a particular winter dredge survey. But for now, I hope what you end up with are recommendations that you have a pretty good majority of feeling about when we go forward with this, and that you, as I said earlier, that you look at the benefits and the costs, and the costs don't have to be economic. They could be on the stock itself. So, and one of the things that was brought up just on the sponge crab, the last thing I'll say is what was promoted to the commission back in 2007 was that the dark sponge crab rule did form a de facto sanctuary on its own. And I heard it here tonight, well, you should be moving off those crabs anyway. So that, you know, the commission will have that information and everything else. Staff is here to help, and, you know, then we just take it to the commission. But we're here to listen, but also to help you plan. And next meeting, I hope there'll be a little more planning. And I think most of the time you have pretty good focus. And I'm not a judge or anything, but I think this is a little different than the typical Crab Management Advisory Committee where you have 15 different ideas flowing. At least now you had some topics that you could address. So I think that's an improvement, and you know, we appreciate it here.
Well, we go back and think about this. Maybe when we talk about the sanctuary, maybe we need to think about trying a 1 or 2 year plan and see what happens. You know, if we just thought we wanted to, you know, close a little bit of it, extend a little bit, and make a little wider, a little bit narrow, and say we'd like to try that for a 2 year period and see if anything has happened, anything has gotten any better. Instead of trying to stick it down the throat just where you want to be forever, that let's try it for a couple of years and see if that helps the stock and, you know, and things improve. And
that's fine.
Gives us a benefit there.
I think if even though it's late, I mean, it's not that late at night, but it's late for the meeting, but if you have things that you want looked at, so for example, I think Rom was trying to find out if there was an interest for him to look at a year-round Lower Bay Sanctuary and what effect that would have on the stock. If that's something you want, then maybe Ron could start looking at that, perhaps?
If the committee's serious about it.
Yeah.
Well, we want a trade-off. If we're going to extend something, then we want
the point is that if the committee's serious about doing this, then we would look at and see what you have to play with. You know, if you have a year-round sanctuary, does that mean you can open have a partial winter dredge fishery? Does that mean you can do the North Carolina, the offshore sanctuary.
The biggest problem with the sanctuary, what's created, it's caused everybody to jam in small areas. And, you know, we jam right in. Look at the area we can't work in.
No, I understand that. But,
so if we spread people out,
I just
wonder
what you want us to look at, what you're really serious about us looking at, because it's not it's not something that sit down in half hour.
I understand.
So we'll have to sit down next time and get very concrete.
But there's no way to calculate what it's going to do on the pressure that it alleviates. We're not getting nothing in return. You know what I mean? If you're not there catching them, if you're not up there and catching them, we're not getting no credit for...
We will get something in return.
That's what I'm saying. I can tell you what you do.
If we come up with a plan that we reduce the sanctuary, extend it down north or whatever, and then next year things are better, we have accomplished something.
Now that we have taken this and we've broken this down to an informal thing and we're discussing things about where we want to go, what is the future for the industry bound? I mean, it looks to me like we're trying to reinvent the wheel right here with what the industry panel's been doing for 3 years and has discussed everything that's been said here tonight over and over again, has been asking for BMRC's help and BIMS's help. Come up with pilot programs for a 2 or 3 year period. I mean, what's the role of the industry panel now? Is this another way to say, okay, industry panel, you all gotten so far, you're gaining some ground, let's shut you right down and let's start off at zero now again and prolong this thing. And we'll start back and
I see three people that are on the industry panel sitting right here today.
No, but I'm saying, but the thing is...
Why does it have to stop?
I'm not saying it's got to stop. I want to know where the industry panel is going to go now. If we're going to be all of a sudden now that what we've worked on for 3 years... And come up with pilot programs.
Well, did you assume that whatever the industry panel came up with was not going to go in front of the advisory committee?
No, it was going to come here. Yeah.
Well, you're here. What difference? Keep doing what you're doing. You all have some good ideas.
I think my perspective is limited because we've only had this one meeting. But we are departing with this approach, which Pete had recommended, and effort control. So the panel looked at some effort control at their last meeting, and we'll look at it more rigorously this meeting. This committee, the CMAC, looked at effort control from what's in the fishery, the active, and at some point we'll be ready to look at latent effort and waiting lists and everything. And I see we need all the help we can get.
That's right. So we need all the help we can get.
No, really.
It's just an expansion of...
No, I mean, I don't mind that. I just don't want to see the industry panel all of a sudden get shut down after 3 years of work.
I wasn't interested in that. All I was interested in us being able to sit here and talk just like we're talking.
I've got no problem with that.
Without having to go through. And the other thing is, when you sit up there, you can't even see each other.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, anybody who wants to come to the industry panel is welcome to come to that. There's plenty of room there for people to come, and that's going to be another meeting this Sunday. 1 o'clock at the Waterman's Museum in Yorktown. Anybody wants to be there?
Did y'all get good data when them few boys hit drugs that winter? As far as, like Jimmy Dean.
The judge was probably, it was great data.
Well, why did y'all stop that?
1 o'clock.
I mean, how come
cost.
Well, no, I mean, we completed the study.
We did one study, frankly, with the cost involved, that's all we could afford to do. It doesn't take away from that one study at all. It would be nice at some point in the future, if necessary, to do another study, but we made a lot of ground with one study. And BIMS folks here worked hard at that study, and BMRC pitched in too. So it was really a good event.
It was that study that allowed us to promote the idea that a limited winter dredge fishery could be open in mud bottom because there was very little mortality. So, and that's where we stand.
I mean, me personally, whether I'm eligible, ever eligible to dredge or not, I like to see it open back up. Mm-hmm. Right. Whether I ever go or not, because, I was
getting better price
for me. All right, 5 minutes after 7.
I think I make a motion, Mr. Chairman. I think it'll be in January.
In January, next meeting?
Probably later in January. What staff will do, I think by now we have your emails, and so we'll give a couple of dates, because I think at last time we said Tuesday, then Wednesday, and then Thursday. So we'll give a couple of dates for you to choose from.
All right.
Okay? And these three topics, but when you receive your emails, if there are other things you want to talk about, let us know.
All right, leave the journal.